Thank you, Steve. Hi, guys. It's us. It's Phil and Wendy, and it's Monday, and
it's sunny.
And it's sunny. So that's good news. I'll go on.
I was just going to say, Steve Bertrand, last we saw you, you were killing some time to go to your son's gymnastic match.
Yes.
And how did he do? I was worried about it all weekend.
He did very well. The team finished, I think, seventh overall, but he had a personal best on the vault, or tied his personal best. So,
can I ask the question that one of my daughters asks anytime there's a contest of any kind, Steve? Did he have a good time?
Did he have a good time?
Yeah, winning or losing.
Wait,
does not...
Wait, your kids ask that?
My daughter Reese, whenever there's a contest, a game of any sort, never... Winning and losing means nothing to her. She only wants to know, did you have a good time?
Right, well, this is high school athletics, so fun has nothing to do with
right.
it.
Right.
Wait,
you're
this is your daughter?
Yeah, isn't that something?
Yeah.
Yeah, she has... like.
That's it, we're done with my kids that quickly.
No, we'll come back to you. No. I promise. We'll come back. Just let it breathe.
30 seconds.
I always... I don't know what it is, but to me,
winning,
I want to know who won and who did not win. And she, that doesn't matter to her. She just wants to know, did you have fun? Did you have a good time? So I'm trying to get in line with that. It's
You'll
not
never
easy.
Do it.
It's not easy.
Reese is such a good girl.
Like when they do the sports scores, if you turn on ESPN at the end of the day and they're giving you the list of sports scores, they say Padres 6, Rockies 3, Orioles 7, Mariners 4. They don't say the Mariners had more fun than the Orioles. They never give you that.
Well, Steve, the reason I bring this up with your son Noah is because, God, is he cute.
He is a cutie.
Does that sound bad?
Yeah, be careful, Steve.
That's okay.
Be careful.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, the big news is that I have my final prom behind me now. Thank God.
Oh, is that true?
Yeah.
That was prom on Saturday?
Prom was on Saturday, yeah. So no more of those.
I like that only seniors can go at our kids' school. I really do, because when I went junior and senior year, and it was with the same guy, and really it was a waste of money. I mean,
that's
really.
That's the secret that no one wants to admit, but it's true.
Oh, it's so true.
Even
it's
though
ridiculous.
The prom is a memory that will last a lifetime.
It was a waste of money.
What's the success rate on the prom, really?
No, and I was in love with the kid at the time. The kid, he was 2 years older than me,
yeah.
From a different high school. But it was the same guy, so it was like the same thing.
Sure. Of course.
So I like that it's senior only, and I think that works well.
But can I ask a quick question? What happens?
My son's date is his girlfriend's a junior. So
that's what I was just going to say. What if you're dating somebody who's not a senior? Then that screws up everything.
Well, so is he going to have to go again next year?
Well, a year is a long time in teenage romance, so I don't really want to speak to that, but I don't know.
I love my kids. They don't want a girlfriend right now.
Mm-hmm.
I said, what is wrong with you? They're like, too much work.
Mm.
And I said, okay.
Mm. In that case, they're never going to want one. Just
I'm
kidding.
All right with
that's
that.
A joke.
I will like that. And it's funny you say that's your last prom. Michael had a Madrigal concert, and I was sitting next to a gentleman, and we started talking, and he said his grandson was a senior, and he said, this is the last Madrigal concert I will ever have to go to. There's been three other. This is the fourth.
Yeah.
Last one, because there were older brothers.
Yeah.
I said, oh, yeah, I got next year, too. Yeah. But what's wrong with me? I enjoy it.
Yeah, I've been driving my wife crazy because I'm like, well, this is our last high school sporting event. This could be the last time we're in this school. And
so she cries?
No, I'm the one who's more like, well, this soaked us in. We're never going to be here again.
Well, this grandfather meant, thank God this is the last kid going through because I don't have to do it again.
Yeah.
I enjoy it. And then we've got a choir concert tomorrow, and this is the big one that's going to be 3 hours long because
mm-hmm.
the orchestra's involved, too. It's in the big field house. I enjoy these things.
Mm-hmm.
What's wrong with me?
I don't know. It's not sure. Not sure.
3 hours?
This one's a longie, yeah, because it's the choir, it's the band, it's the orchestra,
yeah.
And they each have a part. Last year they did some Zeppelin, and I was loving that. The orchestra did Zeppelin.
That's better.
Ba-na-na,
I like that.
Ba-na-na, ba-na-na.
Yeah, that's
it
exciting.
It was excellent.
Sure, yeah.
So I enjoy it. It's like seeing your kids play sports. You have to go every week.
Yes.
Madrigals and choir, it's just, you know, 5-6 times a year for 3 hours at a time.
How big of a crowd do they normally get?
Pretty huge.
Do they get a lot of people?
Yeah. I don't know if it's parental guilt or what.
No. Couldn't be.
I enjoy all this stuff. I
but
really
you
say, do.
But if your kids were not involved,
well,
like,
I wouldn't
would
just
go
for the heck of it.
That's what I mean. I mean, I know you're enjoying it, but I think a lot of the enjoyment is, obviously, because your kids are part of it. You wouldn't just go from town to town asking if there were any Madrigal shows going on in the area, would you?
Any high school bands doing Led Zeppelin that I can listen to?
Well, this isn't the marching
You're
band.
You're not on StubHub every morning going, I'm trying, I can't get tickets to the Madrigal show.
I have never been a dancer. I never will be.
You don't know that.
Yes, I do.
All right.
And there is a group called the Eurythmics, which I'm wondering if Annie Lennox is going to go after these people. That's their dance troupe
or Dave
at LT.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Can't leave him out of it. And I don't have a kid in that, and yet I was this close to going, but I had a previous engagement. But mm-hmm. I was just going to go see. I can't believe how talented these high school kids are these days.
But
they blow us out of the water.
But you won't devote a couple hours to The Sound of Music.
Mm.
Why
troubling.
Bother?
Maybe if a high school
right.
did the play.
A magical right. form of Sound of Music at a local high school.
I
maybe
just found
then.
Here, Wendy, the Vernon Hills High School Woodwind Club
That's
is performing.
That's funny.
What time is that show, Steve? Because I may want to take that into
5:30 faculty library this afternoon.
I'm in.
Can
I'm
I
in.
Tell you something? Michael was in Legally Blonde his junior year, and if they do Sound of Music next year, I will be torn.
Oh, no.
His senior year, if he makes the play and he's in Sound of Music, I'm not going.
It's two worlds colliding. I don't
oh
know what will
God.
Happen. Let's hope it doesn't come to that. That would be horrendous. All right, a quick break and then a lot more show. Stay where you are, Bill and Wendy, WGN. I know that you and I have been kidding about the TSA, but it's not funny. It's serious. I can't believe that this has become such a huge problem so fast. My two of my in-laws, my sister-in-law and my brother-in-law, were flying in from Tampa on Friday, and they were told, you got to get to the airport 2 hours in advance. Of course, they weren't thrilled with it, but, you know, you play it a little safe. They got there 2 hours and 10 minutes in advance, didn't come close to making their flight.
Are you kidding
2 hours and 10 minutes prior to getting there. Yeah. So what do we do? I mean, they're dropping the ball on this. We're paying, if you look at your airline fare ticket, you're paying for that. There's a tax that you're paying to pay the TSA people.
Which they've cut a lot of, so who's getting that extra money?
I don't know.
Did they get a raise?
No. TSA people will tell you they're not big on raises over there, but they've cut so much of the staff that pretty much anywhere you're flying to at this point, you're not going to get there on time. You got to get there more than 2 hours in advance. That's unacceptable.
All right. I just asked you something off the air, and you made me feel like everything was going to be okay, and now I'm not believing you.
What?
We're leaving. We're going to Disney in a couple Fridays.
Yeah.
I have to pick Michael up at after summer school at noon. Figure we get to Midway at 1.
Yeah.
And then the flight leaves at 3.
Right.
Am I going to make the flight?
Wait, are you going to get there on the day of the flight at 1?
Or the yeah, you got to get there the day before.
You're funny.
One day yes. early, they say now. All right. With Florida, because there's so many flights out, I know who you're flying, and they have flights every hour. So worst case scenario, they slide you to the next flight.
Do I have to pay for that?
No. No, you won't have to pay for that.
Should I make the flight an hour later now?
You'd still be getting there at the same time. I mean,
an hour later, but some are nonstop. Yeah. I figure 2 hours at Midway, although it's going to be a Friday.
Right. Right.
God, this is ridiculous.
I know.
I could see it if flights were like $30.
Right, but they're not.
I'd wait 4 hours for $30 flights.
Right. It's an expensive proposition to begin with, but really, I mean, this is out of line. They have to fix this fast. They're inconveniencing thousands and thousands and thousands of people every day. People are missing flights left and right, and they're getting there. Like in the old days, you could get there. I remember getting flights 20 minutes, 30
Absolutely.
Minutes before. Not a problem.
It's like you'd get through and they were already boarding.
Yeah. Yeah. But now they're asking you to get there 2 hours in advance. And then when you do, you still don't make your flight.
I meant 3 hours.
Right. Did I say two? Whoops.
I can't.
That's not good.
And Midway has changed so much. I mean, you used to just get out of your car when someone dropped you off. You'd walk right in, get
right.
on your plane pretty
right.
much.
Right.
And now it's
sprawling.
It totally is.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
And this is where that guy videotaped the line was at Midway. That's what scares me. I would almost expect it at O'Hare. It's a hub of activity. World's busiest airport. Are we still world's busiest?
O'Hare is. I don't remember. I can't remember if they are or not.
But they have an international hub. They have all these flights. It's way huger, and I could see a three-hour line there. I can't accept it, but I could see where it would happen on, like, a busy travel day or something.
Yeah.
But this was at Midway. If you watch that video that guy took that went viral, it is sickening.
Yeah. So I guess the big question is, who do we bombard with complaints to fix this? Is there an office that is governing this that makes the decision that even though they thought these budget cuts were a good idea, it's working against everybody?
Well, I think they know somebody.
I'm sure they know it, but everyone's still traveling. If you have to fly, you have to fly. I know driving's an alternative, but if you have a set amount of dates that you're allowed on your week off, you don't want to eat up all the time driving.
But that's our decision. If we want to continue to travel, we're going to have to deal with it, it looks like.
I get, you know, here's the weird part. I'm the last person to complain about, and we've talked about this before, I'm willing to give in for the safety aspect. I'd rather feel more secure knowing nobody's got box cutters or a bomb, any kind of incendiary device on the plane. I'll give you the time. But once it gets into the 2 and 2.5 and 3 hour range, that's insane.
And they did a random thing, and people they were testing the TSA agents, and people who had incendiary devices and things got
through. Still getting
through.
I know.
So,
you see that a couple of times a year, some investigative journalist somewhere will do a report where they've got something hidden on them, and they still get through TSA fairly easily.
I get through with a lighter every time.
Do you really?
In my purse. I forget to take it out. And every time.
When I was at another radio station, somebody who made the trip's mother came along with us. And she took out at the airport a letter opener. You know those letter openers that look like daggers?
Yeah.
She had that in her purse. And I said, they let you through with that? And she said, I told them it's a letter opener, which is great because it is a letter opener.
But you could still impale someone.
Right.
Was she expecting mail service during her vacation?
Yes. She had her letters forwarded to her on the plane, Steve, which I didn't even realize they did. But they did that for her. And I don't know if I've ever told you this story. When I go to sleep, I have a white noise machine at home, and it makes me sleep so much easier. And I will travel with it from time to time. If I'm going somewhere, I'll just pack it up. It's really small. All right, so they stop my bag as it's going through the scanner. They stop my bag. And I have to be honest. When you look at it in a scanner, it looks like a bomb. The way that it's built, the way that it's shaped, and the way the electronics are involved, as I saw it go through the scanner, because they kept backing it up and moving it back and forth.
I love when they do that.
So then one of the guys calls me over and he goes, sir, do you have any identification on you? And I did. And he goes, can I ask you what this is? And he shows me the white noise machine.
Did you feel stupid saying what it was?
I said, it's a white noise machine. And he goes, okay, that's fine. And he just took my word for it, which I appreciate. But I would rather them look at it, take it out, and examine it than just have a doofus like me go, well, that what you're looking at there is a white noise machine, sir.
You say that now, but if you have to be apprehended and stay in a little special room for a couple hours, you wouldn't like that.
But if it were someone else on there, wouldn't you be a little uneasy going, some guy just explained to them all it is a white noise machine. Take the 30 seconds and look at it, examine it, make sure.
Sony? I don't think they make bombs.
They don't make bombs.
I think you're good.
They make white noise machines. You're good to go.
Jim travels with a bunch of audio recording equipment, so microphones and a lot of wires and an actual, it's a digital recording device that looks like a taser pretty much.
Yeah.
And he gets, like, they keep going back and forth and they ask him and they take it out. So I'd like them to check it.
Please,
you're right.
Please take it out and check it. That's fine.
Well, we have people who want to talk. Shall we take a break, do some news, and then talk about the fun of flying?
Yeah. If you can stay on a hold, please. We will get to your calls right after the news. We're at 312-981-7200, talking about the TSA and the long, long, long lines. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
TSA, what does it stand for? I'm not going to make fun because I need them to keep our flights safe.
I don't know what's going on. They announced a couple of weeks ago, you know, they cut a bunch of staff and they said, here's what we're going to ask you to do from now on. We've asked you in the past to get there early, but now you have to get there about 2 hours early. People are getting to the airports 2 hours early and still not making their flights. Steve.
Can I tell you guys one more story that
sure.
we're watching? And we've been in touch with the Wilmette Police Department. Expect to hear more coming up. But I just want to give you a heads up. It's an unusual story coming from TMZ this morning that Sinead O'Connor is missing.
Yeah.
And police in Wilmette, Illinois, are concerned about her safety. I think she's had some issues in the past and received treatment after writing an angry letter to her family members. But according to TMZ, she went out for a bicycle ride yesterday afternoon in Wilmette.
Really?
And has not been seen since.
What'd you do with her, Bill?
I didn't know. She. So what? I don't.
Nothing
has
compares.
Has she been living in Wilmette?
I don't know.
She
but
just
I
went
know,
there to take a bike ride, it
but
seems.
But I know that they're concerned about her safety.
That's
Wendy.
Very strange.
No, so, I know. And it's very strange that she has gone missing.
Well, she.
Here.
Yeah.
So that's why I bring it up.
Yeah.
It's just that it's, we're, you know, and we expect to hear more coming up. But,
there's some background, though, Steve. I don't know if you're aware of this. About a week ago, she claimed with Prince's death that Prince had been getting drugs from Arsenio Hall, which seems unlikely anyway. Arsenio Hall then quickly slapped a lawsuit on her saying, you can't say that. I wasn't giving Prince drugs.
She doesn't seem like she's in her right mind if she'd
yeah,
be saying that.
Right.
And they're worried about her.
They've classified
mental
her as
health.
A missing suicidal person.
Oh, terrible. All right. So we'll certainly keep an eye on this. And in the newsroom, they're working on it as we speak.
You know, I guess I should say, because it's in the area, she was described as on a bicycle in a black parka, black leather pants, and a sweatshirt. Of all things, with the word Ireland on the back. So,
was it common knowledge that she'd been staying?
I wasn't aware of it.
I didn't know that
either.
I don't
think anybody knew that. She was probably trying to get away from people. Last seen on a Raleigh motorized bicycle with a pink basket.
Interesting. Interesting. All right.
We'll keep you posted
yeah,
on that.
All right.
Hope she's okay. I mean, her family's
yeah,
worried about
of
her.
Of course. All right. So back to our TSA discussion. I know people have been waiting on hold for quite a bit, so let's get some of your calls and your thoughts on this.
Hi, Harold.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good. Where were you flying out of a month ago?
We were going to Vegas, and my girlfriend says she says, well, we'll leave about 9:30. We're going to take a 12 o'clock flight. Actually, it's a 12:30 flight. And I'm like, we're going to leave to go there? I said, it's going to take an hour and a half to get 2 hours to get there from, you know, we're from Wrigleyville.
All right. So she wanted to cut it close. You said, no way.
And I'm like, no, we got to give it plenty of time. We leave at 7:00. She's like, okay. So we left, and we got there. I think we got there around 8:30. We were out of through TSA by 9 o'clock, and we're like, now we got 3.5 hours.
Yeah.
Was this O'Hare or Midway, Harold?
Yeah, it was at Midway.
Okay.
So, and I says, maybe it has to do with, but then you were saying that, Bill was saying that some video went viral where some guy was furious about, you know,
3 hours, Google it, 3 hour
wait. They show the line, and
I have to look at it, but. It's just.
But that was a month ago. I think a lot has changed in the last month.
It must be. It's there's something. There's something. There's something. When they cut the service, they've damaged something because I mean, like I said, we literally went through TSA in probably 15 minutes, and everybody had to take their shoes off, and we still did it in 15 minutes. And when we came back from Vegas, we had a bottle of hot sauce that I bought for my brother. Not thinking any of it. It's not labeled. And it's like they're holding all our bags and stuff like that. And we're like, what's going on? And they're like, what's this here? And they pull it out and it was like, oh, it's hot sauce. It is shaped in the shape of a skull.
And it's explosive, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, I guess. It's only, hey, listen, we went to Cancun probably, I think, 2005, something like that, 2006. We went to Cancun. Flew there on a plane. We can't literally fly, but we took a plane. And we came back. And we went through the airport in Cancun. It's a little, you wouldn't believe the airport in Cancun. It's like a gymnasium. That's how.
Right. You know, that's how a lot of those places, Jamaica as well.
It's very small, but it's so we go through and we go through TSA and we hand the girl our passport. My girlfriend hands both passports to her. The girl looks at the passport and then looks at us and hands it back, but she didn't open it.
Just the cover? The passport cover is all she looked at?
That's all she looked at is the cover with a little eagle on there or whatever. She just looked at the cover. She never opened it. And then she looked at it, looked at us, and then handed it back to us.
But did you at least get through quickly? Because that's all we care about.
Yeah, well, that went pretty quick.
That seems secure.
Thank you, Harold. I appreciate you calling. Is this Norma?
Yes.
Hi, Norma.
Hi, how are you?
Good. We're talking about TSA lines at the airports. You have a story?
Oh, my gosh. Well, I have two stories. One, I left DIA to come back to Illinois. I was in Denver visiting my daughter, came back, went through TSA after about an hour and a half wait, and then I got on the plane and I realized I had in my purse my whole manicure set and a Swiss Army knife.
Oh, no.
And my first thought was, my husband always says, just remember, Dennis Rodman was once a TSA agent.
Was he really?
Yes, that's what he told me. I don't know if it's true, but I believe that's where he started out. He was a TSA agent. I thought, oh, my God, we're in trouble. Because, you know, if this is the quality that we're hiring, I mean, to protect us and protect our nation, this is scary. I mean, I don't mind waiting an hour and a half, 2 hours for my safety and everyone else's, but when I get through with that, I thought, oh, my gosh, are you kidding? I forgot it was even in my purse.
They're saying that the holdup is too many people are doing carry-ons. And I will tell you this. I travel with my husband pretty much every time we go somewhere, and he was all about the carry-on. He never wanted to check luggage. And I got so sick of walking down those small aisles and banging into people that it is just so much easier to check your bag. But if they're charging for it, that's why people are carrying on, and that's why those lines are so long. If you
check
your bag and you just have like a purse or a computer bag, bing, bang, boom, you're through the line. But so many people are carrying on these bags that are way too big, because once they get to the plane, the flight attendants say, oh, no, this is too big to go in the overhead. We're going to have to check it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what the problem is.
I believe you are correct, because that's exactly what I've been kind of seeing also, where they get up there and they're, or people that try to cram it into the overhead.
Yep.
I keep thinking, it's not going to go. It's not going to fit. And finally, they come and they're like, we have to put this underneath. Well, then we have to wait, don't we? So we have to wait for the plane. Everybody, we can't take off when people are standing there without, you know, luggage put away. So it's all a holdup all over. The whole system, I think, has to be looked over. But I don't know if it'll ever, you know, if it'll ever be right, because the quality that we're hiring is just not going to, it's just not going to cut it.
Well, some people are, you know, they're doing the best they can. Did you have a second story real quickly before we let you go, or did we hear it?
Did not. It was just that and the Dennis Rodman, which is pretty scary to me. But anyway, well, you guys have a great day. And
thanks,
enjoy
Norma.
Thanks
you so much.
Some TSA agents are doing their best.
No question about it. I think right now the problem is more quantity than quality. I really do. And I don't have the exact numbers of how much staff got cut, but it's very, very apparent at any airport right now.
Janice, hi.
Hi. This is my question. We have a 6 a.m. flight, so that means we have to be there at 3 a.m., but then nothing is open. Does it get worse as the day goes on? This is because we're going on a cruise, so, I mean, we got to be out of here.
That's my thought is, you know, it seems like they get backed up as the day goes on, because that three-hour line, I don't remember what time that guy who posted the video was there. But you heard the guy who called to go to Cancun, and he was in and out. It was an early morning flight. I know that's when a lot of flights take off, but if you also notice, those are the cheaper flights.
Sure, right.
It's not prime time.
Right.
Yeah.
That's a good question, and I don't know the answer to it. I don't know if you heard about a week ago, I told the story about how when my daughter flew to Costa Rica, the TSA was closed down for several hours during the middle of the night, which I didn't know, especially at O'Hare, an international airport. I figured the TSA must be open 24 hours a day, but it wasn't that case.
What if you have a red-eye flight? Are there not any taking off?
I don't think they take off during the night, do they? Isn't there like a three-hour span where they don't take off?
No.
I know they come in, because I've come in where everything is completely closed.
Right.
It's so weird.
I think they both come in and take off, I think, 24 hours. I'd be shocked if they had a couple-hour period where flights weren't taken off at a major airport like that. That doesn't seem possible. But it was very disconcerting. I was always under the assumption, no matter what time of the day or night you got to the airport, the TSA line would be open. And they explained, no, we're not open for another 90 minutes. And my daughter just looked at me and I said, I didn't even know that was a thing.
And didn't they open at 5 and her flight was at 5?
Her flight was at 5:15. So she got through TSA and then had to run and just made it.
Well, call your cruise company or something, Janice, because, you know, obviously you don't want to miss this.
Right.
No, no. And I have one more story. My husband has his master's degree, very intelligent man, and he flunked the TSA test.
Oh, he did? Wow.
That that's always been our big joke in life. Jim can't pass the TSA.
Oh, no.
I'm sure Jim's happy you're mentioning that on the air, Janice.
Telling everybody. Oh, nobody knows who I am. Okay.
Janice, thank you.
Have a nice cruise.
Thank you. Bye.
We have a lot more people with stories and ideas and questions, so if you want to jump in, 312-981-7200. It's the TSA Nightmare, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
All right, TSA seems to be under some scrutiny lately because they have, even though we pay a service fee, they have lost a bunch of TSA agents, and now it takes you 2 days to get through the line.
I know. And you can't bring a shaving kit because if you're standing in that long line, you have to shave a couple times. You can't because it's a blunt object. It's a sharp object.
What's that called? A dop kit?
It's a dop kit. Yeah.
All right, John, how are you?
I'm doing good.
All right, talk to us.
I'm a first-time caller. Does Bill get to ring a bell or something
like
that?
Yeah, hold on. I got to find. Hold on. I don't have a bell. I have some spray. Hold on. I don't know if you could hear that, but I sprayed stuff.
Where'd you spray that?
I just sprayed it into the atmosphere.
Oh, my God. It's lemony.
Take that, ozone. So what's up, John?
Oh, look what you've done. It stinks in here.
So I live the nightmare. So I have platinum status with American Airlines.
Yeah.
I've flown over 2 million miles. So I get priority access as well as I've been TSA approved for the last, I think, 3 years, whenever it started.
Yeah.
And it seemed like the last few months it's been miserable where the TSA pre-check lines are longer than the normal line.
I've heard other people say that too. Why would that be? That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, well, can I say that they're really incompetent at staffing people? But part of it is they don't look at the demand, and now everyone can go. Let me backtrack. To be TSA approved, it used to be because of your status,
right?
Of flying.
All right, we get you're rich. You must have said that 15 times, John. Welcome to the
but
show.
But not rich. It's just it's because
no,
of whatever business
no,
you're
I
in,
know.
Right?
I'm
is that what it
you.
Is?
Yes. And so yeah. When I go in, I don't want to see grandma and the five kids. I mean, I have kids, but I don't want to see them.
Yeah.
TSA pre-check. So I think it was last fall or sometime last year, they started offering $85 for anyone to get pre-checked.
Mm-hmm.
So what I learned is people that are going on their vacations, they'll pay that $85 so they can go through to make it easier. So all of a sudden that demand to go through these lines have increased immensely. It seems like at O'Hare it's worse than the other cities, and I'm not sure if it's how American Airlines is staffed at O'Hare or United.
That should have been just for business travelers, really. That shouldn't have been allowed for...
Let me just say, I'm taking a couple trips this summer.
That's business travel,
Steve Bertrand travel.
Well, aside from that, though, I just was emailing with my wife today. I'm like, hey, should we sign up for this? Should we pay this? Should we... So I will be one of those knuckleheads who don't fly that often.
But think about your average family. Let's say you have a family of four. That's $340 to hopefully
we
bypass.
Travel once a year. It's not worth it for us.
That's what I mean. A lot of families, if you're not traveling constantly, why would you pay that? And then, as John is pointing out, you still end up staying in a long line after paying $340 for a family of four.
So they had two, you know, so you would go like by the first class area for security, and that used to be always for like platinum, gold, or for, you know, you get to go through really quick, lines are short.
Right.
Now, it's almost non-existent to go through like a platinum line, you know, on it. It's everything is TSA, and I fly at, say, 7 in the morning and 8 o'clock at night, and the lines are insane.
Both early and late.
And there are no 24-hour flights, by the way, we just found out.
And I like to cut it close. I live 15 minutes from O'Hare, so if I have a 7 o'clock flight in the morning, I try to arrive by 6 a.m. and then sweat it out, and hopefully someone will be nice enough to let me through.
You'd think that would be enough time to get
that
through.
That should be more than enough time.
Seriously.
It was, as of last fall, it was plenty of time. And then literally since the beginning of this year, it has been a nightmare. But if you're going home, the lines aren't as bad, so I just wonder if it's the cuts are at O'Hare or if it's cuts nationwide.
I think nationwide.
Although we are having, this is the world's busiest airport, and if it's not the top one anymore, it's sure up there.
Yeah.
So that explains stuff, too.
And if you look at the profits, you know, the airlines are making, which is good, you would think that could at least justify.
But that's not the airlines. Cutting. This is the.
I know, but. But everyone, we all pay whatever it is, $5 or $10.
Right.
You would think that would just have the ability to pay or staff enough folks on those lines, but it's just mine.
Well, keep your fingers crossed. Hopefully this will get better. Somebody said, again, that it's about the carry-on bags. Thank you, John. And someone just questioned and sent in a text saying, you know, if you get through with your carry-on bag and at the end they say this is too big, we're going to have to check it, do you have to pay the $100?
No,
I think people do it.
Right.
I think they know full well it's too big.
Yeah.
But here's an idea. Why don't the airlines remove the checked baggage price?
Oh, that'd be all right.
And then more people will check stuff.
Yeah, but they're making such a big profit on that that what you would see then is that it's really funny. You're going to pay either way. It's just a matter of do they hide the fee by charging you for your bags or do they make it blatant and raise the ticket prices? They're going to do one or the other. They're not going to take a loss.
I'm just driving.
Yeah, that's all you can do. All right, thanks, everybody, for your contributions. We have to take a quick break, then Steve with the news, and then a lot more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Everybody get up.
Kevin wanted me to share something with you. This is Blurred Lines. Get it? That's what he said to me.
Oh, that makes sense, actually.
Hey.
That makes total sense. Well played, Kevin. We'd give you a raise, but...
Well, it's Monday.
Yeah, we can't. Can't do that.
All right, Blurred Lines. Here's the thing, and Bertrand, you can get in on this, too. We're growing up. We have a very limited amount of games that we love and toys, and each and every one of us has played with an Etch-A-Sketch.
Oh, yeah.
Bertrand?
Sure.
I got pretty good. I could figure out a way where you twist both the knobs, where you can get a diagonal line as
right.
opposed to just up or down.
Right, good.
But our guest, Jane Labowich, is amazing. I can't believe what you have done with this Etch-A-Sketch. Welcome to the show.
Having me.
Absolutely. All right. You do more than diagonal lines and vertical lines. You have recreated an amazing piece of art. Which masterpiece is this?
I did Sarah's Sunday on La Grande Jet.
All right. You may not know that by just the name. I know this painting, and you will too, listeners, because there's a telltale person in this picture that identifies it. There's a woman with an umbrella she's very dressed up. She's in a park and she's got the biggest butt in the world.
Oh, nice. Nice. Did you have to have a special Etch-A-Sketch made, Jane, to be able to pull that part of the picture off?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
That's how Wendy judges all of her art, as to whether or not the subject has a large butt or not.
No, listen, this was so unmistakable. It was like Nicki Minaj before Nicki Minaj was around.
Sure.
And it was a painting that was hanging in our elementary school right in front of the nurse's office, right outside the nurse's office.
Mm-hmm.
And you would notice how giant the butt was. Sure. And everybody would go, oh, my God, look at that woman's butt.
Well, that's all we wanted to do, Jane, so thanks for coming by.
No, come on. How do you know this painting?
Sunday in the Park with George is a famous painting, but as a kid, it was on the cover of Playboy magazine one month because they hid, you know, the Playboy rabbit symbol?
Yeah.
They hid it somewhere
in her butt.
Well, they could have, I guess. I don't know that that's where it was. But how did you come about this skill? I mean, to be artistic is one thing, but to use such a specific medium is another. How did you pull this off?
Well, I started playing with an Etch-A-Sketch when I was 4, and just like every other kid, I had one in the house, except I was really bored all the time, and my grandma wouldn't really let me watch TV, so it was like the other thing to do other than watching TV, so I...
You made your own pictures on what looked like a TV.
Yeah. It was like the next best thing to having a TV to watch. So I inadvertently taught myself how to use the toy and didn't even realize until I was about 12 that other kids didn't know how to play with it. Like, I just lived in this insular bubble where I just assumed everybody knew how to draw an Etch-A-Sketch.
Well, we do to an extent. You can make like crosses and plus
and
signs.
The outline of a house.
Right.
That's about it.
Yeah.
But now you have absolutely recreated this masterpiece called, what is it called again?
Sunday in the Park with George.
Or the
is
French.
That right?
Or Sunday on La Grande Jet.
Yeah.
La Grande Butt.
That's what Wendy calls it, Jane.
I'm
sorry. Don't think less of us.
How did you recreate this? Like, exactly. I mean, Bill,
to
do you know?
To the smallest detail.
I know. Can you make these little lines
like
to
that.
Round them off like
no.
that?
Nope.
Well, so I did this over the course of four sittings at the Art Institute. I decided that I wanted to visit the original painting in all its glory, because it would have been a fun idea to do it in the office, too. But there's something special about being in front of the real thing.
And sure.
In the public eye, just being at the Art Institute is one of my favorite places in Chicago. But I taught, you know, it's something that I taught myself how to use the toy. And once you get past the point where you don't have to think about which way the knobs turn, it's just intuitive from there. Like, I don't have to think about how to operate the Etch-A-Sketch as I'm using it. For me, it's as simple as drawing with a pencil and paper.
Wait, not us.
But the other element is you can't double back on part of it once you've finished that part of the painting.
Yeah, you can.
No, but you don't want to make extra lines, you know what I mean?
Right, that's a good point. In fact, there are unique challenges to Etch-A-Sketch in that, you know, it is all connected with one line. So say I'm on, you know, working on the big butt, and I want to go to a tree over on the left. I have to retrace exactly over lines that I've already created if I want to travel to that point.
Oh, so you can, but the trick is you have
precision.
To be exact. Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Oh, all right.
Didn't you always try to go over the lines?
You could never do it.
It was like right next to it.
You were off by 1/32nd of an inch.
Right.
The smallest.
Right. And that matters on an Etch-A-Sketch because everything is so small. I mean, the height of one of the heads on here is probably approximately like 1/4 inch. So
yeah.
Every minute detail does matter.
Did you ever do this? Because I did this as a kid and still regret it, kind of. I was so curious about that device that was inside that I cleared the entire screen. It took me a couple of days, and then you get to see the inner workings. You see a vertical and a horizontal metal pole and a
right.
little cone in the middle. And
yeah.
you can never get it back again. Once you've cleared it, it doesn't come back.
Right. Yeah. Every Etch-A-Sketch is a little bit different, so some of them erase better than others. But in my experience, I remember doing that as a kid too, and it
yeah.
just kind of
it ruins the illusion, doesn't it? I mean,
right.
I'm glad I did it, but
it ruins the mystique.
Yeah, yeah. It kind of does.
What do you mean? You filled out the whole thing in like you made it black?
I completely
yeah.
cleared it so you could see the inside because it's like a silvery dust. I don't know what that is.
Yeah, it's aluminum powder that coats the screen, and so you're operating a stylus that's hooked up to these horizontal and vertical axes that are operated by the knobs. So then, when you make the screen go black, you're just scraping all of the powder off
right.
the screen.
Right.
Yeah.
So I did that, and then I could kind of see inside and see what the inner workings look like.
During the 1950s, do you know how odd this is? It was invented in France. Obviously, you knew that.
Right, right. Yes. It was invented by André Cassin in France. And,
the Etch-A-Sketch was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was bought by the Ohio Art Company, who had it until quite recently, until February. And they just sold it to Spin Master in Canada.
Oh, they did.
Yeah.
So you've done, this isn't your first art work. You've done other famous paintings at
oh,
some
yes.
point, right?
Yeah. I've done two different renditions of the Mona Lisa, one in its kind of traditional form.
And a big butt one for Wendy?
Say that again?
Did you do one with a big butt for Wendy?
Mona Lisa might have had a big butt, but it was not sticking out
right.
like Le Grand Butt.
Right. Why would you tackle the same one twice? Did you learn new methods to improve on it by the second one?
Yes. The second one, I decided to treat it in more of a kind of 8-bit style, in keeping with the original concept of an Etch-A-Sketch, how most people draw with kind of staircases and stuff.
Yes.
I thought it'd be really fun to approach it in a different manner, and it was really well received.
It's so funny that you have a name for that because I always wonder because it's hard to make rounded edges. It's so precise that you're going to get an upline or a sideline, but
right.
to do a rounded edge. So you're right. We are all kind of doing it in a staircase style pretty much.
Right. And it was actually more difficult for me to render it in a kind of blocky staircase style because I'm so used to operating both knobs that I had to restrain myself from just going straight for the curve
right.
like I normally would.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. We are going to, I know it's radio, but do you have, it's princessetchasketch.com.
Yes.
That's your website.
All right. So you can go there, listeners, and check it out. We're also going to take some pictures and put them up on our Facebook page at Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder. We question the fact that you brought this beautiful masterpiece up with you today. And how come it's not disappearing? Are you keeping it completely straight? Is it in a pizza box? And is it
right? So I yes, my Seurat rendition is not yet preserved, which means I haven't yet made it permanent. So as long as I just keep it flat with the earth, I can take it everywhere. I've been riding the CTA with it all over town. I've been walking with it. I've ran with it a few times when trying to catch a train.
How can you make it permanent? Yeah. Is there an option that we're not aware of to make something permanent?
Yes, there is a way to make it permanent. So it's a messy process, but it's doable. You can drill a hole in the back of the toy and then remove all of the excess aluminum powder out from the inside so that when you shake it, there's nothing left to recoat the screen and what is on the screen will remain.
Did you have any idea you could do that?
No, but Bill,
that.
Come on, think about it. What did we make? A dog walking up a staircase?
Yeah,
who's going to save
that?
Save
right,
that.
It's a process that I've tried and tested many times because it's become necessary for me if I want to preserve renditions that have taken me hours and hours to create.
You're an artist, Jane Labowich, in the studio with us. You're an artist. Do you ever have a little bit of self-doubt after you've taken all the powder out and said, I could have gotten that a little better?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Sometimes it's one of those things where done is better than perfect. You know, I can look at a rendition and think like, man, I wish I would have done this a little bit differently, or I wish I wouldn't have added this line here. And with that, on an Etch-a-Sketch, there's no erasing.
Right.
You can't undo anything. So you have to commit to every line you draw. So if, if there's anything that sometimes I find that I overwork a rendition and you can't just erase back and get rid of those lines.
What does that
mean,
you overwork a rendition? Too much detail? Is that what that means?
Too much detail, adding too many lines. Sometimes less is more.
Yeah, I bet.
And, on an Etch-a-Sketch, every line has a distinct thickness. So you're either really working with, dark or nothing. And so you have to be careful sometimes not to do too much because it can look... It can look too busy.
You can't really do shading, right? There's no way to do shading.
Oh, there's shading on there.
Yeah.
Over the years, I've developed a few different kinds of shading techniques. By sometimes I do little minute squiggly lines. Sometimes I do a series of parallel lines.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'm going over those lines up to 20 times.
To make them really dark?
Yeah, to get that real black darkness that I'm looking for. Yeah. So there is a there is a way to give an Etch-a-Sketch rendition tonal range,
That's
believe it
phenomenal.
Or not.
That's phenomenal.
Every time you say something, Bill and I just look at each other in disbelief, like, oh my God.
If you saw the crap that Wendy and I made on Etch-a-Sketches, you would get up and leave. You would just walk out.
I made Snoopy on top of his doghouse once, but he had a squared off nose.
Hey, that's still impressive. I started with staircases too.
There's hope for us, Bill.
Mine is always a boy waving. That's I have over 1,000 versions of boy waving with fingers that are all mangled. It's just hideous to see what I've done.
We're going to take a quick break, and then we're talking Etch-a-Sketch with Princess Etch-a-Sketch. You can find her amazing work at princessetchasketch.com. Her name is Jane Labowich, and we'll return 312-981-7200. It's Bill Leff, Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN. What you can't do is what Princess Etch-a-Sketch can do. Her name is Jane Labowich, and she started playing with an Etch-a-Sketch when she, what did you say, 4 years old?
Yep.
And now she does such amazing work during the commercial break. Bill, why don't you explain some of the gorgeous works of art we just saw?
Jane showed us about a half a dozen, some of them on the smaller version of the Etch-a-Sketch, some of them on the standard version of the Etch-a-Sketch. Each one of them just stunning. I can't even imagine the amount of hours it must take you to create these works of art. What does it take you?
Oh, thank you. On the small ones, I can knock out a rendition in as little as 15 minutes for the really simple stuff, but sometimes it could take up to 4 to 5 hours.
Yeah.
On the large Etch-a-Sketches, things usually start at 1 hour at the bare minimum and can take over 25 if I'm doing particularly detailed work.
I would have guessed a lot more, by the way. You look at those, you say, that's a month and a half. I can't believe you're doing that quick.
I bet you're getting quicker with them, though. As
I am. Yeah. The more I do, the quicker I get, definitely.
All right. And if you go to princessetchasketch.com, you're going to get a link to her Etsy store. And I have to tell you, there, unlike Bill, there are a lot of Bears fans in this city. And there's a little Etch-a-Sketch, a mini one, of the coach. It's Ditka.
Mike Ditka, yeah.
And
oh, look at that.
Do you do custom work? Like if somebody has a logo for a company? Because I'll bet you get a lot of work.
Yeah, I'd say about 80% of my work is custom. And that Ditka Etch-a-Sketch was a custom order that I did, I think, 2 Christmases ago. Yeah.
My son has not gone to prom yet because he's a junior, but I am going to save this idea and I'm going to share it with everyone. How cool would that be if I could do a custom order where she would write the name of the girl he's going to ask, will you go to prom with me?
That would be outstanding.
Aww. Oh, my God.
Nice
Talk about
move.
Promposals.
Right. And you went with the Ditka where he's not currently having a heart attack. He's just standing straight up, no heart attack version of Ditka. That's a good idea. I'm doing, and I'm not trying to steal your idea, but I'm doing American Gothic using Rock'em Sock'em Robots. Is that going to take me a long time, do you think?
Yeah, I'll probably take a few Rock'em Sock'ems to
right,
put that together.
Fine. That's fine.
Yeah.
So the price range on these is what? What's the high end and the low end from the price range?
Right. The low end starts at about $120, yeah, and then the high end can be over a grand on some of my large edges.
I don't think that's a lot at all. I really don't. For the amount of hours you put in and the beauty and the novelty of this all, I don't think that's a lot of money at all.
All right. I'm confused with your Etsy website might be wrong because there's a Pokemon thing.
Oh, yes. Okay. So I also sell prints, and the prints are at a significantly lower price point. But yes, I've done a lot of Pokemon work. I do a lot of pop culture related things as well. So yes, I'm a fan of Pokemon. I'm a fan of video games. A lot of stuff in that genre. I've done a bunch of work, and it's been pretty well received online.
Are you afraid, because I know that you do other art, are you afraid that your other art will be overshadowed by what you're able to pull off on an Etch-A-Sketch?
Not really. I do art in other media, but I've always enjoyed doing Etch-A-Sketch art the most. So
good.
I'm just running with it. Like, I'm thankful that any of my art has gotten any good reception. So,
yeah.
I mean, I'm just counting my blessings, really.
And these prints are, what, $7? And that's pretty cool, too. Like, my 16-year-old son's way into Pokemon. He's going to be 17 next week. And this is just a picture of what you've done on a mini Etch-A-Sketch. And there's that, like, red leather that it's laid on. And then you photograph it and do a print?
Yeah. I take high quality photographs and then I offer them as prints for people who are looking, who are interested in my work and want to support me, but are looking for a lower price point, which I totally understand.
And Jane, galleries can contact you. You would do a showing in a gallery, right? I mean, you could hang these Etch-A-Sketches up. That's,
oh, yes.
That's legit.
You've had showings,
definitely.
I hope.
Yeah. In January of 2014, I went to Paris to show my work at a fashion show. It was a really great adventure. I showcased about 20 pieces of mine there, and I've had works up here and there in galleries throughout Chicago. And
how was it received in France? I mean, sometimes, you know, it's Paris, it's France.
Right.
They invented it in France. So
they did. Well, yeah, they did. Were they kind to you?
Yes.
They were.
They were right. Very kind to me. Yeah.
Right. How many cigarettes did they smoke while looking at your work? Because that's how you can tell if they like what you do, by how many cigarettes they smoke.
You know, there were actually a lot of cigarette smokers.
Yeah, I would imagine. Sure.
Couldn't believe it. Smoking right indoors. It was just
everywhere.
Really?
So common. Yeah.
Bill always says that. I didn't believe people in Paris smoke.
Little baby smoke in France.
There's a little spiral thing. I mean, if you go to princessetchasketch.com, it connects you to her Etsy site.
Right.
I got to tell you, completely blown away by this. We'll put together a little video of all the works that you brought in so listeners can see it on WGNradio.com and our Facebook page, Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder.
Wonderful.
You're so good at this. And I'm not just thrilled that you're able to pull this off, but that you enjoy doing it so much. That's the best part of it, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm so thankful that I'm able to do what I love.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm ordering some. These are really such a unique thing. And again, if you have a business or a logo or something, that would be really cool to get and frame and put on your wall.
Yep.
Totally cool.
Definitely. Yeah, I've done a lot of logo work. Companies do like contacting me because it's a unique way to display your logo. No one would expect it.
All right. Why isn't Etch-A-Sketch behind you and providing you free Etch-A-Sketch? Why don't you do a logo of the Etch-A-Sketch and send it to them?
Oh, sure. Well, Etch-A-Sketch was just recently purchased by a new company, Spin Master, in February. And I've just started communicating with them. I mean, they've just acquired this toy, so they're still figuring everything out. But I'm really excited about working with them in the future. And it seems like they're going to be really great for promoting their artists.
That's
and
perfect.
Send them a copy of this podcast. You can get it at WGNradio.com. If we can help in any way, she's amazing. She's Princess Etch-A-Sketch, Jane Labowich.
Thanks, Jane. Appreciate
Thank
it.
You.
We'll do the news next. Kim will give you the news, and then we'll talk to Eric Zorn. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Thanks, Kim. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. And every Monday, we're fortunate enough to be visited by the feistiest columnist this city's ever seen. Tribune's Eric Zorn. Hi, Eric. How are you?
Two guns blazing.
Yep.
May the 16th be with you.
And
oh, my God.
You
are so funny.
Am I late for that?
No, you're fine.
I'd like to know what artwork you're going to do following the Princess Etch-A-Sketch.
I just saw that. That's really impressive.
I'm blown away.
I was going to do like some like little circles inside circles and
that's fine.
Little drawings.
That's fine.
I don't know.
Do you remember Spirograph? How fun that was. They had little plastic like circles and you would just go around and make various
with
geometry
colored pens,
figures
you'd use
basically.
Five different colored pens.
Yeah, but you wouldn't impress anybody the way those Etch-a-Sketch drawings.
But nobody knew, like when you looked at it, you didn't realize it was being, you know, you were using some sort of artificial means to create those pictures. But they looked phenomenal.
You know, our standards were kind of low back then, though. I think,
sure. Everybody didn't have a lawyer handy at all times.
Home-generated artwork, man. I tell you what.
Speaking of art, watch this. It's the worst transition in radio history.
This is
how about
be...
that Mel Reynolds, huh?
That man's.
You could draw art on his teeth.
Oh no!
That man's life is an Edvard Munch painting.
Yes, it is. For people who are not aware of Mel Reynolds, and he's been in the news for decades at this point.
Oh, my goodness.
Let's give a little background on Mel Reynolds.
Mel Reynolds. Well, for people who don't remember, Mel Reynolds was an up-and-coming politician in Illinois. He was a Rhodes Scholar, which means he studied over in Oxford, England. He was a Harvard Business School grad, and everyone thought that he was... I mean, basically, he was Barack Obama before Barack Obama was Barack Obama.
You're right.
He was this extremely promising young African-American politician, very bright, very well-spoken, and he beat Gus Savage, who was this sort of old-style African-American congressman in the 2nd District. I think I got my numbers right. Anyway, so this was, in, I think, 92 he won. And then several years later, he got in trouble because he was having sexual relations with a 16-year-old campaign aide.
Yeah.
And was charged with that. And there was a rather spectacular trial in which he had to testify. And it was really something else. He was convicted of that.
And he was married at the time. Did he have a family? I can't remember.
Yeah, Marisol was his wife.
Yeah, that Marisol Reynolds. I do remember. Yeah.
Anyway, so he flash forward a little bit. And then there was also, while he was in prison, he also got in trouble again for some tax problems that he had with his use of campaign funds. A little bit, you know, somewhat similar to what we're talking about with Jesse Jackson Jr. and Aaron Schock, some of these politicians who get in trouble, you know, not filing the correct documents and misusing their money. Anyway, so he was pardoned ultimately then by Bill Clinton in one of Bill Clinton's final.
Isn't that
ironic? I know.
Come on.
The jokes write themselves.
He's the one who pardoned him.
Well, he was actually, I think at that time he was pardoned for just his tax. And his sentence was commuted. He wasn't pardoned. I mean, because the conviction still stands. And that's important to remember because then as the years went by, one of the things that really stood in the way of Mel Reynolds getting traction again, getting his life back together was the fact that he's a convicted sex offender. Now, he was 40, 41 years old, something like that, having sex with a 16-year-old, which is a terrible thing. And the conviction was, you know, obviously solid.
Yeah.
But the fact that he now can't live within 500 feet of a daycare center seemed kind of silly. I mean, it wasn't like he was never going after like toddlers and stuff.
Right.
He was going after, you know, teens. It was, and again, very inappropriate, but he wasn't a danger to, it wasn't that kind of a danger. The law prevented him from finding solid places to live.
Can you remind me, because I can't remember what was in it for Bill Clinton to give him a pardon?
Well, every president has that power.
I know, and they use it like crazy.
Well, right before they're about ready to get out of here, yeah.
Yep.
And
I think I've talked about this with you. I suggested years ago that power be taken away, that any pardons had to be given with like a year or more in office, because you're really escaping any controversy by pardoning everybody at the last minute.
Well, then. At least before that last election, right? When you're in November, you really officially become a lame duck. People say that Barack Obama is a lame duck right now. He's not actually literally a lame duck. He's a lame duck after his successor has been elected. At that point, it does seem like, because there's no way the public can respond at the ballot box to that action, and it does seem like that power ought to be limited at some point, maybe reviewable or something. You don't want to totally get rid of it because it is a nice balance against the power of the state, and it's often used in a wise way.
Yeah.
I know, you know, Governor Quinn and actually Governor Rauner has used the power of the pardon, the executive in Illinois, much better than Blagojevich ever did. Blagojevich was as stingy as possible with these pardons, which is somewhat ironic at this point. Anyway, as time goes on, and the problem that now Mel Reynolds has gotten into, former Congressman Reynolds has gotten into, he failed to file tax returns from 2009 to 2012, and he just didn't file anything. And he was working at the time in Africa, doing a lot of work in Africa as a consultant, consigliere. I don't know what he was doing exactly. It's not clear. You know, he was helping facilitate some business deals over there. His contention to the federal court, where he's been charged, is that he was only being paid expenses,
mm-hmm.
and that so he wasn't actually making any money. wasn't earning enough money to file.
Mm-hmm.
But he, after his arraignment last year, one of the conditions of his release was that they, you know, had to know where he was. He got permission to go over to South Africa. Has he followed this part of the story?
His daughter was sick or something over there.
I think she's got some sort of spinal issue, and I'm trying to remember exactly what the name of it is. But he's over there caring for her, ostensibly. And then,
why doesn't she come home?
Well, that's a good question. And the other question is why he didn't come home when he was ordered to come home. The court allowed him to go over for a length of time. He didn't come back when he was supposed to. They ordered him back. He didn't come back. And then finally, when he did come back, he arrived in Atlanta and he was arrested. His computer and phone were seized because they were trying to figure out, you know, what's going on with him. And then it turns out that his daughter, who's allegedly, you know, in such dire straits, is posting pictures of herself on Facebook.
Oh, no.
She was feeling better.
She was feeling better. She was vacationing in Germany.
Yeah, I did
and
see
stuff,
that.
So.
That's right.
So it's just another weird wrinkle in this story. So
this is while he was supposedly visiting her in Africa. She was in Germany at about the same time?
At about the same time, yeah. Yeah. Or contemporaneously enough to suggest that his presence over there wasn't necessarily needed to. And he, of course, at every stage, he's been crying racism, and this is a terrible thing, because the only reason they're picking on him is because he's black. And so he comes back, he has his computer, his phone seized, and he comes back up to court here, and the judge wants to put him on home confinement with a, you know, monitoring device on his leg, but they can't find a place for him to live. He can't find a friend who doesn't live within 500 feet of a school or a daycare center or a park.
Housing is limited
and you know, it's absurd, because now he's 60 some years old. He's not a danger to kids in preschool. I think anyone who contends that is just, I mean, that's kind of part of the hysteria that goes along with
former
sex offenders.
Unable to live near a high school is what
should be. Yeah, I mean, arguably, I suppose you could say that, but he's not a playground pervert, never was.
Yeah.
But so now he's in Kankakee Jail, Kankakee County Jail, awaiting trial. And last week the news broke that he is unable to prepare for trial, and he'd written to the judge saying, "I got to plead guilty. I got to put this behind me." So I was talking to his legal advisors, not formally his attorney anymore, because he fired the guy as his attorney, but he's still the court appointed legal advisor. And he says, no, he's been talking to Reynolds, and Reynolds now wants to change his plea. He wants to plead not guilty and go to trial, try to make this case. So the story just keeps getting stranger. And
why the change? What happened that made him decide?
This is unclear. I think he probably just realized he had a change of heart. And he's you know, seriously angry about this, and he thinks that he can beat these charges. And the interesting thing is going to be, he's going to have to, you know, call people to the stand who are going to have to explain what they hired him for, what he was doing over there, you know, how much money they were paying him, and so on. I mean, it's just going to be interesting, at the very least, what's going to happen with this guy. But this is a story that there seems to be these cases in Illinois of young, promising politicians who just completely go off the rails.
Right.
And we mentioned Jesse Jackson Jr.,
right.
Aaron Schock, the congressman from Peoria, the guy with the Downton Abbey office.
Yeah.
I mean, these are people, all of whom were talked about as potential, you know, either mayors of Chicago, governors of Illinois, even some of them had presidential ambitions. People were talking about Mel Reynolds as a possible presidential candidate and Jesse Jackson Jr. And, you know, somehow they just can't keep their hands out of the cookie jar or other places, and their careers go off the rails. And the Mel Reynolds story is so, I mean, at first it was just outrageous, like this guy, and he does this incredibly stupid thing. But at this point, it's almost like pitiful.
Yeah.
You know, you think,
it is pitiful.
Like, you just think this guy's not quite right. And,
well, how about people? And I can't just limit this to politicians, but I'm sure you know people in your own life who are just, quote unquote, victims of circumstance. Wherever they go, bad luck seems to follow them. And you always say to yourself, do you truly believe it's bad luck? Couldn't some of this be a blame on you?
What's
maybe
the common denominator
right
here?
It seems,
what's that character from the comics with the walls walking around with a cloud over his head?
Well,
handicap.
Was it
bad luck? Schleprock for the Flintstones.
Beetle Bailey, just to whip it out.
Oh,
no.
What?
Who is it? There is a guy. But the Flintstones had a guy named Bad Luck Schleprock that was always had that.
I think, yeah.
Or Glum from Gulliver's Travels.
Got to be who I'm thinking of. But anyway, yeah, you're right. There are people who, but these guys seem to manufacture their own bad luck. I mean, it's not bad luck when you have sex with a 16-year-old campaign worker.
Right.
That's a bad choice.
Some blame on that one,
but
don't
you? Some of the other stuff, it seems kind of bizarre that he's in jail right now.
Well, that does. And, you kind of wish him the best. You think, well, this guy, I mean, he hope that he could put his life together.
So if he had had somebody come forth and provide him with a place to live, would they have not put him back in jail?
They did. A couple of people did come forward and offer him a place to stay. But where are you going to find a place that's 500 feet from? I mean, daycare centers are everywhere. Parks, schools. It's hard to find a place that fits the definition. And, again, I just think that at some point that they need to rethink that law in terms of the kind of offense that was committed and when it was committed. This is like we're going on 22 years ago where he was doing this stuff. And yeah, I don't know. It just seems like something where you'd want to cut the guy.
He and his wife Marisol are no longer together, right?
That's correct.
Yeah. Okay. So a quick break, more with the feisty Eric Zorn. If you want to jump in, 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Eric Zorn is here. Is he feisty? You bet he's feisty. It's Bill and Wendy. Eric, the cartoon character you were talking about that always has a cloud over his head, I did some extensive research, went through my data files. Joe is his first name, and his last name is BTFSPTLK. I don't know how you pronounce that.
Is that, that's in,
I don't know who's, it looks like
Lil
it's
Abner?
Lil Abner. Yeah. It looks like it's Al Capp's work.
Okay.
So Joe Biddleflesplicht.
Okay.
That's is the guy you were thinking of. Thank you very much, Wendy. But my gut feels great.
It's much less gassy in here.
Much less than it was. Yeah, I don't know why.
I used to come in here. Just... Yep.
It changed this woman's life.
Yep. Okay. Yep. All right. Let's talk a little bit about the big race, the big presidential race. Bernie Sanders is not going anywhere. He refuses to drop out. Is that a good thing or a bad thing or what?
Well, it's a normal thing. And one of the things that I was interested in looking back in 2008, there's this two-person Democratic race going on, and one candidate everyone is written off and says, can't win, delegate math isn't there, but the candidate hangs on, fighting to the bitter end. And that candidate, of course, was Hillary Clinton. Barack Obama, who was then our senator, was hanging on to a lead in the delegates and was gathering up superdelegates. And Hillary Clinton was saying, well, I can still talk some superdelegates into voting for me. And if you remember this, do you guys remember the whole Michigan-Florida business?
A little bit.
Michigan and Florida, they moved their primaries up in the calendar because, the earlier the primary, the more important it is.
Sure, of course.
Everyone pays a lot of attention to Iowa, but no one, Kentucky's this week, and then Oregon and California after that. And it's like people are not really paying all that much attention. But the earlier primaries get more media buys. It gets more attention. So yeah. Michigan Florida moved their primaries up. The Democratic National Committee said, no, you can't do that. So if you do, your primary is not going to count. Your delegates aren't going to, it's just not going to count. We're not going to figure this into the nomination battle. They went ahead and did it anyway. Hillary won big. Obama wasn't even on the ballot in Michigan, but Hillary had impressive, substantial victories in Michigan and Florida. And she was arguing through May that the Democratic National Committee and the superdelegates ought to pay attention to that, because if you counted those votes in Michigan and Florida, then she had the lead in the popular vote and arguably had a claim to being, and she kept saying, I'm the one who's much better positioned to beat the Republican nominee, who was, of course, John McCain, and he had already secured the nomination. So anyway, so Hillary Clinton has seen this story before right now, and so we've got a sort of similar story happening now. Bernie Sanders is winning a lot of primaries. He's probably going to win Kentucky. A lot of people think he's going to win Oregon, too. Even though the polls show Hillary Clinton ahead, Oregon seems like it's kind of friendly territory to, Portland and those places.
Right,
seem like it might be a Sanders country. And then, he's campaigning in California, and California voters, never know what they're going to do.
Is this going to make a difference?
No, it shouldn't. It probably won't. Hillary Clinton's got a pretty big lead over him. And even if he wins these primaries, he's going to have to win them really resoundingly to pick up enough pledged delegates. And then on top of the pledged delegates, of course, there are the superdelegates who are the ones who are unpledged but have mostly committed to Hillary Clinton. But, the whole thing is that she hung on until June 7th after the California primary, and that's when she gave, and she gave a really nice speech, if you remember this. She gave a speech saying, you know, we've all got to get together and, you know, pull on the oars and get behind Senator Obama, and it's very important that we win the White House. Said all the things you expect him to say, her to say, expect a loser to say. And I think that's going to happen this time, too. There's a lot of concern that, well, Bernie Sanders is out there, and he's harming Hillary Clinton. He's making it harder for her. But I think that everyone needs to take, you know, who are on the Democratic side needs to take a deep breath and realize that this is going to be okay. That, you know, this is part of the process.
Sure,
and
of course.
As long as he tries to bring his supporters and he comes around and says, look, it's important enough for us to get behind this. And he's indicated that he will.
Yeah.
So is that Steve Bertrand already?
Nope. That's a guy who looks like Steve
looks
Bertrand.
Like Steve Bertrand.
Look at all these mincing rascals talking to one another.
Handsome fellow, isn't he?
It's really too bad that the Mincing Rascals isn't a video podcast, because we are
or
such
a video game.
We're all such a dashing group, but
except for John.
Except for John.
Don't.
Although as cute as that little cartoon is, it doesn't look like you people.
It doesn't look like me at all.
No, the one that you use as a logo. That
yeah.
one. Yeah. 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 Eric, thank you. We appreciate it. Eric Zorn, read him in the Chicago Tribune. We'll check in with Steve in just a little bit. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Kim, thanks. Hi, everybody. It's Bill F. and it's Wendy Snyder. It's our second show of the day. We're thrilled that you're listening. Contribute anytime you want. We're at 312-981-7200. That's the call line and the text line.
Did you go outside yesterday?
I was outside yesterday, sure.
I just want to let you know that we matched a record, the coldest May 15th in Chicago in more than 120 years yesterday.
What's with that?
The mercury dropped to 35 degrees Sunday morning at O'Hare International Airport, where people are still waiting in line, matching the record low set in 1895, according to the National Weather Service.
It's so strange because most of the winter was pretty mild.
It was.
We weren't bombarded with a lot of snow. It wasn't overly cold. But really, this is about the time of year where you think, I'm pretty safe. I should be in the 60s and 70s most of the time. And we're not really getting that.
Chicago, I think it's supposed to be the average was in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And that didn't happen at all. Even Rockford had its latest spring freeze since 2002 overnight. Its official temperature dropped to 31 early on Sunday, so they were colder than us.
I saw clips from somewhere in Michigan, I'm guessing way up northern Michigan, where there was sizable snow. They were showing it, and it looked like December or January.
Really?
And it's the middle of May. That's not right.
For even more perspective on the recent cold snap, temperatures in Fairbanks, Alaska have been warmer than Chicago the past few days.
Can you believe that?
At the same time it was 35 in Chicago, it was in the low 60s in Fairbanks, where temperatures hit the 80s on Saturday and upper 70s on Thursday and Friday.
Yeah, that's at some point, you just got to go. Could we just have a couple of warm days just to remind us how nice it would be?
But
just
don't
a few?
Aren't you noticing the season is completely changing? Like, honestly, when the pools open, it's sometimes not warm enough to go to the pool.
I know.
Needless to say, we didn't join a pool this year.
For that reason?
Last year we went three times. It got warm after August when the lifeguards all go back to school and the pool closes.
I know. You know, we go to, not every year, but most years we go to Maine. And normally, the middle of the summer, you can go in the ocean. And it's a little colder there than, you know, if you're used to the ocean in Florida, it's pretty warm. But as you go further north, it's colder. It was cold every day but one. We were there for 4 days. We had three cold days and one nice day. And that's in the middle of the summer. That's late July.
It's the summer season is shifting.
Yeah, it is.
It's now like July to October.
Yeah, I know.
And I saw my neighbors were out planting things in their veggie garden yesterday. And I'm thinking, it's still cold. I'm waiting until Memorial Day. Mm-hmm. And then it might still be cold.
Right.
Maybe by 4th of July I can do some planting.
Right. Hopefully. A guy who we talked about a week ago is in the news. There was a huge baseball fight yesterday. These are two teams that do not get along. The Toronto Blue Jays and the Texas Rangers just out and out do not get along. This has been going on for a while now.
That's a big rivalry?
Well, it isn't like your typical geographical rivalry. You know, you have some teams that, you know, you're a state away, so they don't get along. But it's a personnel problem. The guys in the Blue Jays and the guys in the Rangers. It started... I'm trying to think if in this story it goes back in their history. Remember I told you about a guy who plays for the Texas Rangers, and his name is Rocknid Odor, but his last name is spelled O-D-O-R. It looks like odor,
I'll never forget him because of you.
Pronounced Odor. Well, he got into a huge fight with Jose Bautista, who plays for the Blue Jays, a giant fight. And here's, I don't know if you saw the clips of it, but it was an ugly, ugly fight. I mean, I'm surprised no one got killed. These guys were pounding on each other. But here's what I was thinking. In almost every profession, certainly the one you and I are in, and my guess is the one that most people listening are in, if you got into a physical fight with somebody, like if there was just some guy in the office and you didn't get along with that guy in your office and you started pounding on that guy in your office, you'd probably get fired, wouldn't you think, in almost every profession?
Well, yeah.
But in sports, for some reason, you have to sit down for 2 days and they'll still pay you.
See, but in like hockey, I see it. But baseball, there shouldn't be like fights like that.
Right.
I know a lot of times there's a melee where there's a bunch of people who come into a big group in the field.
Yeah.
Which is kind of what happened after Odor got in a fight.
Yeah. In hockey, you see this commonly where as a play is being whistled over, a guy will take a jab, a little extra duke or a jab at a guy, and then somebody else will push, and you get a lot of that.
But you're that's almost expected in hockey.
It's the physicality of the game lends itself to that, and I guess to some extent football too, because you got guys just running full speed at each other, so you're going to get a couple of mix-ups.
And basketball, you could get an errant elbow, and I'm surprised there aren't more fights in basketball.
Right.
But baseball, to me, there's really no real contact other than if you get hit by a ball.
Right.
The pitcher hits you intentionally.
Then you got a problem.
Right.
But try to do what these guys, what Bautista and Odor did yesterday. If you were having a dust-up with somebody here at the station and you just started wailing on them, don't you think management would go, oh, that's a problem, child. We can't have that person working for us. We got to let you go. They're not going to get let go. They will get paid to sit on the bench for a couple of days.
That's all he got is a two-day suspension?
Well, I don't know that they have announced. Let me look and see. I don't think they've announced what... what the long-term suspension is for either of these guys.
While you're looking, can I just say there's a YouTube video of it up that you can find, and it just cracks me up because it's Bautista Odor fight in Blue Jays Rangers game, MLB.com.
Right, right.
An odor fight? No wonder it started.
Well, sure. You're going to, if somebody comes in with a foul smell or aroma, you're going to certainly do what you can. It says, it's no surprise that the Toronto Blue Jays and Texas Rangers aren't on the friendliest terms. Their rivalry started during Jose Bautista's now infamous bat flip game. Tempers flared, benches cleared a few times during that contest. That was last year, by the way.
Oh,
but
so
cooler
recent.
Heads, yeah. But cooler heads eventually won out. I have to be honest with you. The way the Cubs and the Pirates were in the, they had a one game playoff last year, a wild card game to see who would advance in the playoffs in the NCLS. And they did not get along too well, the Cubs and the Pirates. And I thought, this is going to be the start of one of those things where every time these guys play each other, there's going to be bad blood.
Somebody's
going to get
somewhere.
Yep. So far, nothing.
I'll tell you, it looks very patriotic with the Blue Jays and the Rangers, just the very red, white, and blue.
Right. Well, some of that red's blood. So you got to take that into account. All right. A quick break. We have a big show for you, including a voice that you have heard quite a bit, and you don't know what's behind it, and
I'm
we will explain.
Mean to that voice sometimes.
Are you mean to
sometimes.
That voice? All right. We'll discuss that in a little while as well. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN. You know what I'm worried about, Wendy?
What's that, Bill?
This guy, Odor, who plays for the Texas Rangers, yesterday he roughed up Jose Bautista, and then he said on the Twitter today that he's coming after WGN's Kevin Powell next, and that makes me a little leery.
What did I do?
I don't know.
I never took a cheap slide at him at second base, as far as I can remember.
You'd remember that.
I would, yes.
That's crazy.
That's a heck of a right jab he's got. But this isn't the first time. I don't know if you guys saw the video also circulating this morning of him in the minor leagues also causing...
fighting a whole team.
Basically fighting a whole team.
Wendy, I'm not making this up. It's him against another team, and he's holding up.
He's a little bit of a hothead.
It's like when you see Jason Bourne or somebody like that fighting 11
right.
bad guys at one time.
Or Rick on The Walking Dead.
Walking Dead. Yeah, it's that kind of thing.
Yeah, he's not scared of anybody, including Jose Bautista, who's a lot bigger than him. He's also a little bit older than him. And he just went right at him.
But what started it?
So this has sort of been boiling for a while now, but last playoffs, Jose Bautista hit a walk-off homer, and this is still a topic of discussion in all of baseball, really, because some of the old-school baseball players don't really appreciate a guy tossing his bat in the air and slowly walking to first base after hitting a walk-off home run. I don't know if, Bill, I'm sure you remember that. This was, this was in the playoffs last year.
Uh-huh.
Jose Bautista hits a walk-off against the Rangers, and this didn't really sit well with a lot of people. So these teams
too cocky? Is that what they're thinking?
Yeah, people don't like that. They don't. Some of the old school baseball guys don't like that. They don't like the flashiness. And you know, this is what Bryce Harper was talking about in spring training, where he's, you know, Bryce Harper's a slogan is "Make baseball fun again."
Yeah.
Kind of a playoff Donald Trump's
campaign. Make America great again. Make
right.
baseball fun again.
Bryce Harper has hats made and T-shirts and all that. So
yeah.
That's sort of been that's a whole nother story. But basically, it didn't sit well with a lot of other players. And Bautista goes into second base hard, but that's what a player is supposed to do. He's trying to break up a double play. So if you know, opponents are trying to turn that, if you're going into second base, you do all you can to disrupt the throw to first base. And Bautista did that. And Odor wasn't happy about it.
He took issue with it.
He took issue with
yes.
it. Yes. And yes. A nice right jab. I think he's got a career in boxing if this whole baseball thing doesn't work out for him.
And it was a bench clear. Everybody on both teams, guys from the minor leagues flew in. The minor league
looks
team.
Like it.
Helicopters were flying into center field.
Yep.
Paratroopers coming down onto the
Walker
field.
Walker Texas Ranger was there.
Yeah.
Chuck Norris was there.
And once he showed up, though, everyone behaved.
I mean,
everyone right back
he
to the
dugout. He restored order.
Yes,
he did. He restored order. Now, here's some good news. I have some good news for the south side and the north side of town. Now, right now, it's just what might be. None of this is definite. But how about this as a possibility? The White Sox may get Tim Lincecum from the San Francisco Giants. What are the chances of this, Kevin?
There's a definite chance. Now, there's three teams. Last Friday, Tim Lincecum had a showcase. Eventually, basically what it was is he went to a minor league field, I believe out in Scottsdale, and about 35, 40 scouts from around the entire league wanted to see him pitch. He was one of the best pitchers in the league for a while, and he had some injuries. He really hasn't been that effective of a pitcher, though, to give it some perspective, since about 2011.
They moved him to the bullpen a few years ago.
Moved him to the bullpen. He wasn't pitching great in starting position. He dealt with a lot of injuries, so he's kind of sort of trying to revamp his career here. So he does this showcase last Friday. Everyone wants to see the freak, as he used to be referred to. That's his nickname, because he has a very interesting and peculiar windup, and when you watch it, you don't forget it. So anyways, he was one of the best pitchers. He's won Cy Youngs. Now, it sounds like it's down to the Giants, the team he played for his entire career. That's where he spent the majority of his career, was on San Francisco. The Angels are also interested, and yes, as Bill just mentioned, the White Sox are interested. The Giants want to put Lincecum back in the bullpen.
Yeah.
Lincecum doesn't want that. He's trying to revive his career. So that sort of narrows it more to the Angels and the White Sox, where the White Sox, they need definitely one starting pitcher. And as we've seen, Matt Latos, who hasn't been very good in his past few starts, he's regressed after that 5-0 ridiculous start he began the year with.
Yeah.
So the White Sox, first place, this is legitimate. I mean, the division they play in, they can make a serious run for the playoffs here. So do you wait till the trade deadline and try to make moves there? Rick Hahn and company, they try to do it there. Or do the White Sox say, well, we're not going to wait another month or two. Let's get this guy now. But it sounds like he's looking for, it could be potentially 3 years, $15 million.
So that's how we would get him, is by offering him the best deal, obviously.
Essentially, yes.
Because if everybody else wants him.
Right, and basically guaranteeing him a spot in the rotation. Now, the fifth spot in the rotation has been almost non-existent, really, over the past
since
two
John
seasons.
Dinks left.
Yeah, well, even, you know, when Dinks was on the mound, he was,
yeah,
was almost
inconsistent.
A guaranteed loss when he was on the mound.
Yeah.
So right now, they've sort of had a rotate. Miguel Gonzalez has sort of kind of claimed that fifth spot, but you can't rely on him, especially if you are going to try to win a division and make a run in the playoffs. Me, personally, I say do it. Why not?
You know why they should? He's had a mullet in the past, it would look good on the south side.
He's got crazy hair.
Throw, it is kind of like, eh.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, and I shouldn't say when girls try to throw, and I'm not, but when people who don't know how to throw a baseball throw,
you
they
just did an
that.
Absolute Donald Trump.
I know.
I'm not saying I'm comparing Tim Lincecum to girls, right. But
because
many people
sometimes
have.
Sometimes I forget I'm a girl. You guys always do, so sometimes I forget too. Mm-hmm. But when a bad thrower attempts to throw and you make that noise, that it's a weird little. I mean,
Right, and to try to paint the picture of that noise that Wendy's Wendy's putting out on the radio right now, he will bring the ball. He's a the ball all the way back close down to the mound behind him during the windup. And then he comes all the way over the top like a I did a terrible job of trying to describe
believe me.
It's wild. It's a really interesting windup. And it works great for him. I mean, because people had asked him about that in the past, and he always said, that's just how I started throwing the baseball when I was a kid.
Right.
And he kept doing it, and the muscles sort of adapted to it, and it worked.
And why would you change it?
Especially when you win a Cy Young Award.
And, Kevin, they still have some of Jeff Samardzija's hair care products there at the cell. All he needs to do is find that box, and he's fine. Now, on the north side of town, again, this is just a rumor. But Mike Trout, is that possible for the Cubs?
I don't know how...
Steve Trout's son?
No, no relation. No relation.
I don't know if that's any more of people just their imaginations thinking? Running wild, because the Angels have been asked about this numerous times because the Angels haven't been very good with Trout on the team. So, you know, are they wasting all this talent? Who Mike Trout is either one or two. It's 1A, 1B between him and Bryce Harper in terms of best player in all of baseball. I think that's wishful thinking, Bill. But I will say this. If any team could lure Trout away from another team, it's the Cubs because of the amount of depth they have and because of how stocked their minor league system is. But Theo Epstein, does he want to – I mean, they would have to give up a lot.
Yeah, I guess a lot
to get him. But I guess a kid can dream, Bill. We'll keep an eye on that.
Boy,
but,
would that be nice to see him.
If they got Mike Trout, I mean, there's really no point of any other team playing the Cubs.
How do you spell that when I make my sign?
What if Wendy called him as Tim Lincecum and made that noise to try to convince him to come to Chicago? Would that work?
I don't know. But that
might scare him.
Might be alarmed. He might contact the
authorities. Yeah. He might hit his guard llama.
Yes.
Yeah, so. I'm not criticizing him because he kind of looks a little like Joseph Gordon-Levitt, and
I'm a big
fan of.
No, he definitely does. He definitely does.
So I would say this, Bill. Yeah, and Wendy Lincecum, yes. Is a definite option. Me personally, I would say go for it. He's never pitched in the AL, and we've seen pitchers go from the NL to the AL and get beaten up, but you know what?
Worth a shot,
in my opinion.
Yep.
What's the worst that could happen? Then you go back to the guy who's already holding down your fifth spot, Miguel Gonzalez, or at the trade deadline, you make a move then. That's the one thing, too. You don't have to give anything up other than a lot of money to
That's
get
it. True.
You don't have to give up any prospects or anything.
So. Yep. Good. Fingers are crossed on both sides. I'd love to see both of those guys playing for Chicago. That'd be great.
Either way, we've had some awesome baseball this spring, and
no question.
I don't think it's going to let up. But
no question.
So, Crosstown Classic, what is it when they're both in the World Series?
The biggest dream in the history of the galaxy.
We would call that the Red Line Series, right?
The Red Line Series, yeah.
But the Crosstown Classic or Crosstown Cup, you know, that's July 25th through the 28th. It's kind of weird how they do it now. It's 2 games and 2. It's not like 3 games on the south side, and then a month later it's 3 on the north side. They play Monday through Thursday, 2 at the Cell, 2 at Wrigley.
But I'm good with it being a limited series this year because – one team or the other is going to get hurt, and I want them to both have great records and get into the playoffs.
That's
so
true. And with the amount of passion, I'm almost – isn't it scary to think of a World Series with both of these teams in it? What would happen to this city?
Insanity.
Well, I heard – I don't even remember who was asking this question, but somebody said, do you want to actually see that the Cubs and Sox play each other just so the Cubs will lose to the Sox? Or would you
– Yeah, it's – It's
rather not have them even make it.
I don't know.
Far.
I mean, it's almost wouldn't that just be almost? It'd be horrifying for everyone because it would be nonstop. Your Cubs fans would be going after your Sox fans, you know, vice versa.
Right.
It would be fun though. Are you kidding me?
Boy.
How do you not want to watch?
There would be riots, says Trump.
There would be riots.
But no, I'm seriously scared about. Like this city would go insane. If
yeah,
they handle it.
I would love to see it happen. Love it, Kevin. Thank you.
Oh, thanks,
we appreciate
guys.
That. All right, a quick break. Kim with the news next. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
That's pretty clever, Bill.
The serious moonlight, get it?
Yeah, I get
it. All right,
Susan Bennett is on the line with us. And how'd you like your little intro there?
Oh, seriously funny.
Thank you, Susan. Thank you. Susan, most people, sadly, they hear your name, Susan Bennett, and they're not quite sure who you are, but they hear you every day. Everybody knows who you are, kind of, right?
Sort of. Yes, some people do. Some people are in on the secret.
Would you like to reveal your secret?
Yes, I'm Susan Bennett, the original voice of Siri.
This is just like an episode of What's My Line.
It is.
It's playing out just like a What's My Line episode.
All right, so I guess I should apologize to you because I've sworn at you.
Oh, no.
And there are a lot of people
that's
swear
okay.
at Siri. Hang on 1 second. Who is Susan Bennett?
Hello there, Wendella.
Oh, she didn't answer my question, or you didn't answer my question.
She'll do that. She picks and chooses, you know. You know, she's got kind of an attitude.
I got to tell you, it's really weird talking to you.
How about if I talk up here?
Oh, that's but now it's more comfortable. Right, right, right.
Hi,
right.
It's me.
That's the Mickey Mouse Siri.
How did this come about, Susan? You've been doing voiceover work for a long, long time, but how did you get this particular job, the voice of Siri?
You know, I have no idea. I did some recordings for a text-to-speech company in 2005, and I've also been in touch with several other original voices of Siri, because, of course, there were different ones worldwide, because I don't speak every language in the world. And we all kind of did these recordings at a time when, you know, it was kind of technologically in the dark ages, and we didn't really know what we were doing. We thought we were doing, you know, messaging for phone systems, and, of course, Siri is a type of phone. But in the digital age, you really have no idea. You're sort of auditioning all the time without really knowing it. So I have no idea whether the original creators of Siri chose my voice or whether Apple chose my voice. I really don't know. And no one's talking.
Well, it's kind of weird because they said, was it Time Magazine who just did the
50 greatest gadgets?
And the iPhone is on the top of the list.
Yeah.
Everybody has an iPhone. People who were cellularly challenged have gotten iPhones because the ease of use is so great. So you are on like millions and millions or billions of phones. I'm assuming this is a great paycheck from Apple.
Well, assume away.
Oh, no.
This is so weird. I mean,
the original series, because we didn't really know what we were doing, I'm afraid that we were kind of caught in the black hole between business as usual and just the speed of technology. And obviously the corporations that were running the show knew what was about to happen, but those of us in the trenches didn't really understand exactly what was happening. And so consequently, we didn't have control over our voices. The tricky part is that when you do phone messaging, most people don't pay the slightest bit of attention to the voice. They're listening for information that the voice is disseminating. And so you can do all kinds of work like that, and no one will recognize your voice. But suddenly when that voice becomes a persona, like Siri or Cortana or Alexa, any of those characters that people are interacting with on a regular basis, suddenly people become familiar with that voice, and it does have an impact on the talent. So that was the thing that was kind of quite negative about the fact that we were never acknowledged and we were never compensated at all for the millions of devices we were on. We were paid well. I mean, I can't speak for all of us, but, you know, we each had our different situations, but you know, I was paid well for the hourly work that I did, but I was not at all compensated for being on millions and millions of devices. Yeah. Yeah. So
that's
that was
not fair.
Yeah, that was a bit of a tough pill to swallow. And it's one of those things that I talk about in my presentations and on my TED Talk is that, you know, we can't control what happens to us all the time. And a lot of times we have to deal with unexpected things that may or may not be good. And somehow you have to figure out a way to deal with it and spin it to the positive for yourself. And once I did that, and it took me a long time, I could really embrace it and really enjoy being Siri, the original voice of Siri, I should say, legally, especially because people are so enthralled by Siri. People have relationships with this app. And when I meet people, it still astounds me, you know, the interest that people have in it. But I guess you could say that Siri was iconic because the original series were iconic because they were the first concatenated voices that sounded human and that you could interact with.
I do some message on holds as well. In fact, the story I like to tell is I was telling my husband, would you please call Fifth Third Bank, that's who we have our mortgage with, and I would really like to see if they have a lower rate. And he's like, yeah, whatever. Honey, will you please call Fifth Third? Finally, he calls Fifth Third, and it's like, thank you for calling Fifth Third Bank, if you know your party's extension. And he said you were much nicer recorded than you are in person. So my question to you is, who's the first person who recognized your voice? Was it a friend, a family member, or did you tell everyone before they had a chance to say, oh, my God, Susan Bennett, is that you?
No, I didn't know. I didn't know I was Siri, the original voice of Siri, until she showed up on October 4th, 2011. And a fellow voice actor emailed me and said, hey, we're playing around with this new iPhone app. Isn't this you? And I thought, what? And I went on the Apple site and listened and said, yes, that's me. How did this happen? Yeah.
Susan,
yeah,
you said
weird.
Early on, you said that you just recorded for text to voice. So does that imply that they go in and you record almost every word in the English language? How does that work?
Probably, ultimately, I may have spoken just about every word in the English language, but the phrases and sentences that we read were created mostly for sound rather than content.
Yeah.
And a lot of it was very repetitive, you know, mind-numbing, tedious stuff. But it had to be read so that afterwards technicians and computers could go into those recordings, extract sounds, and sometimes as much as a syllable or even a word, but extract sounds and reform them into new phrases and sentences. So I am not at all responsible for what Siri says. I merely provided the voice. And so this process is an amazing thing called concatenation. And the early concatenated voices weren't something that you would want to interact with because they just sounded horrible. They sounded like really, you know, awful robots.
Yeah.
You know, you'd be like, hello, how are you, kind of thing. And as concatenation, you know, improved with lightning speed, as, you know, much other technology does as well, all of a sudden you had you know, a machine that sounded like a human. And, of course, all these corporations, you know, Apple, Google, Facebook, all of these people are headed towards artificial intelligence. And by the time that happens, it's going to be pretty scary.
But there's some, am I imagining it, there's inflection at times, right?
Yes, they still haven't perfected it to the point where it doesn't have a few bumps. And sometimes it still doesn't have the exact... what's the word I'm looking for? Maybe intonation or, you know, expressiveness that the human voice would have. It gets pretty close, but there are sometimes sometimes Siri will still sounds a bit, you know, bumpy, a bit robotic.
Mm-hmm.
And when recording the scripts, it's like, you know, we have received a payment on July 23rd.
There's a little glitch in the time.
1987. Yeah. You can tell where you have to go up or, you know.
No, we didn't go up. We didn't go down. We stayed very monotone.
Pretty flat.
What made it just really, at first it was a real challenge, you know, from a voiceover point of view. But it very quickly got extremely tedious because we'd have to read things like, say the shrouding again, say the shrouding again, say the shreeding again, say the shrouding again, say the shrouding again, say the shredding again.
You just hypnotized us, by the way.
I know.
Both Wendy and I just fell down on the floor. You hypnotized us.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
All right. Well, so, not only do you hypnotize people, we have Al who has called in to speak to you. Al, this is Susan Bennett, the original voice of Siri.
Hello, Al. Well,
thank you for taking my call, Susan. I understand that people say some not so nice things to Siri, but I said that I'm a contractor and I was just working and I finished talking to Siri and I said, Siri, I love you. And she said back to me, that was nice.
Oh.
But can we get back to work now?
Oh, wow.
Siri's got an attitude.
She definitely has an attitude. She always has.
Al, thank you for calling. Was it exciting to hear Susan Bennett, the voice of Siri, say hi, oh. Al?
Yeah. Hi.
Oh, wow. Wow. Trace this call, Kevin.
Thank you, Al.
Susan, did you see there was a movie with Joaquin Phoenix a few years ago called Her about a guy who does fall? You saw it. What did you think?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's much more about a voice that becomes artificial intelligence. It's, you know, it really didn't relate to the current, you know, state of voice recognition voices, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But I'm telling you, like Al just proved, there are plenty of people out there who your voice has become part of their daily activity, and they do develop some sort of relationship beyond just pressing a button, you know?
I know. They're masochists, I guess.
Can you call?
I always like to joke and say, Siri, you know, you got to watch Siri. She'll send you in the wrong direction just for fun.
Before we wrap up, I got to hear you say Wendella, because that's my nickname, and that's what I chimed into my phone for Siri to say.
Hello, Wendella.
Oh, my God. See, that is, I am geeking out.
Sure. Have you spoken in places, like been in public places where people just hear you talking and they'll turn and they'll just go, I know that voice from somewhere. I just don't know where or if I know it from.
You know, that has only happened once in the 4.5 years since Siri has been, you know, around.
Really?
Because, first of all, I think it's a question of context. People don't expect to hear the voice, you know, outside of their phone or their tablet. And also, my speaking voice is a little bit higher than Siri. I usually talk up here. Siri is more down here.
Mm. She's sexy.
And, but I was in the bank one day and talking about my account, and the man said, new guy that I didn't recognize, said, you sound so familiar. And I thought, really? And he goes, you know, we just got a new iPhone. And I thought, I told him who I was, and he says, oh, my God. And I said, well, I got to tell you, you need to get out of banking. You need to get into some sort of audio production because you have got some great ears.
Oh, wow. That's tremendous.
Susan Bennett on the line with us, the original voice of Siri. Now, you're not still recording prompts and things for Siri, are you?
No. They wanted to put me under contract for another 5 years, and I just thought, you know, I just don't think I have it in me.
Yeah.
Except for maybe $1 million.
Well, yeah, I proposed that, and they kind of laughed and said goodbye. So, no, actually, truth be told, all of the original Siri voices were changed beginning with the OS 7 system. So, if you have an iPhone 6, it's no longer my voice, and that is true for all of the original Siri voices worldwide. We've been in touch with each other. We think it's because we did not have a non-disclosure agreement with Apple. And Apple is they're very serious about keeping their secrets. And so they weren't happy about the fact that the original series were promoting themselves. And so we were replaced. And many people can't tell the difference in the voice because I believe they chose voices that were very similar to the originals. Of course, sounds like night and day to me. But
yeah.
Because I live with my own voice every second of the day. So,
but it must throw you when you're on your own phone and you're asking a question and it's you replying to your question. You're like in a parallel universe at some point.
Yeah, it was really, really strange because I was used to hearing my voice on radio and TV commercials. And, you know, I'm the voice of Delta Airlines, Gates Worldwide. And I was used to hearing my voice, you know, in some sort of public realm. But to have my voice interacting with me and coming out of this little tiny computerized phone, it was just too creepy. And also, the first time I talked to her, she dissed me.
Oh, no.
You know? So I said, well, all right, for you, I'm not talking to you again. I said, hi, Siri, what are you doing? And she very disgustedly said, I'm talking to you.
Wow.
She recognized you.
Wow.
She did. Yeah, she did. She doesn't like me.
This is a Night Gallery episode come to life.
Exactly.
Wow.
Well, it's such a pleasure to meet you, the original voice of Siri, anything prior to an iPhone 6, and really such a pleasure to meet you. Did Apple at least give you a free iPhone?
They gave me nothing. I did get acknowledged by Steve Wozniak at a tech conference one time, and he's a fabulous guy, so that meant a lot.
That's way better than money, way better.
Well, I guess I have to accept that as being the case.
Yeah, I guess.
Well, we will continue listening for you on your various voiceover commercials all over the place. Such a pleasure to meet you today.
Nice to meet you, too.
Thanks. Susan. That's Susan Bennett. We'll take a quick break, and then more show coming your way next. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. It's us. It's Bill F., and it's Wendy Snyder. And I know you're excited about something, aren't you?
Can I tell you one of my... Oh, I love her voice. You know this voice?
This would be Cyndi Lauper's voice.
Oh my God, I love her. I have loved her. I had my hair shaved on one side of my head. Did you know me when half my head was shaved?
Nope.
Did you want to know?
Not last time around, but I'm sure next time around I'll probably be here to see that.
I love Cyndi Lauper. She is going to be at the Chicago Theater tonight, and she's got this new album, Detour.
She did a pretty successful run with the Kinky Boots, that Broadway hit musical.
Yes, she did.
Which I'm mad I never went to go see. But her Detour album and her tour, it's got a country twang to it. And tonight at the Chicago Theater, tickets are still available. You can go to jamusa.com, ticketmaster.com, or chicagotheater.com. I'm very excited. I am driving home. I'm picking up my son, Michael, and we are coming back and seeing Cyndi Lauper.
That's going to be a great show. Remind me, because I can never remember, is she the one who does the theme song to Pee-wee's Playhouse? Is that her?
I think that's her,
right? It's not credited anywhere, but I think that's her singing Pee-wee's Playhouse.
Yeah, they were good friends.
Yeah, right.
And now she's hooking up with a bunch of country western artists to do this on this new record. Vince Gill is on it.
Oh.
Willie Nelson.
Wow.
I can't wait to hear the country twanging sounds of Cyndi Lauper.
That'll be a fun night.
I am going to try and sneak backstage.
Oh, yeah?
And tell her I have loved her.
Oh, that'll be interesting.
She is like my love. Don't you have someone like that that you just completely love in their voice?
Kim Gordon. Mine is Kim Gordon.
Yeah.
That's who mine is.
That's very nice.
Yeah. All right, we'll take a quick break. Kim will use that voice to bring you the news next, and then there's more show. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
I love her voice.
Voice of an angel, no question about it. A strange day, another strange day, I guess we should say, in the life of Sinead O'Connor. Earlier, there were reports that Sinead O'Connor had been staying in the north suburb of Wilmette and was missing, went out for a ride yesterday and hadn't been seen since. Now, if you just heard Kim in the news, there have been several tweets saying everything seems to be okay, that she's been found.
And it looks like WGN-TV is now saying that she has been found and she's been taken to a local hospital. So we will keep you updated on that, and that's the latest that we have.
Thank you, Kim. Ryan Burrows here from the WGN newsroom to go over some of the events of yesterday and today. Hi, Ryan. How are you?
I'm doing all right. Yeah, trying to monitor all this right now on Twitter. So we don't know if she's in custody. Not custody, but if she's fine or if she's still on the run. Kind of a weird story, I think, from many perspectives, right? First of all, when's the last time we heard Sinead O'Connor, except for lawsuits earlier this month when she filed the lawsuit, or when she had a lawsuit filed against her by Arsenio Hall? The first thing I said when I came in here, Arsenio Hall, Sinead O'Connor, and there's a Clinton running for the White House right now. It's like a flashback to the early 90s, right? Mm-hmm.
Am I the only one who didn't hear this Arsenio Hall story?
Oh, it got quite a bit of play about a little over a week ago.
Yeah, this was on May 6th. Arsenio Hall filed a lawsuit against Sinead O'Connor for $5 million after a Facebook post that she essentially called Arsenio Hall Prince's drug dealer. I mean, saying essentially that he was the one who had been giving drugs. She had witnessed it before, and Arsenio Hall said, well, wait a minute here. That's defamation, and I'm gonna sue. So she responded back. If you get a chance to follow Sinead O'Connor on Facebook, or you just want to check at her page, I mean, she does not hold back at all. She will say whatever is on her mind. Some of the stuff is kind of rambling. Some of it doesn't make a lot of sense to maybe people not inside the circle, but she's not afraid to speak her mind.
And, of course, Prince wrote that song for her, which she got a Grammy for.
Yeah, one of the things that Arsenio Hall said was that Prince and Sinead O'Connor didn't have that close of a relationship. So he was kind of taken back by how she came out and said that. He said that she didn't really want or have anything to do with Prince. So obviously there was that relation there with the song, but it doesn't sound like it went much further than that, at least if you listen to Arsenio Hall.
Ryan, part of the surprise for most of us earlier today, I already knew that she was missing, but there was no tie-in at all prior to early this morning that she was in Wilmette. Do we know why? Does she know somebody in Wilmette?
You know, that's what we've been trying to figure out. I know Tribune's been working the Chicago Tribune has been working their sources very hard in this to try to figure out, you know, who is she staying with? Did she have a place here? It sounds like all indications are she's been here for a couple months. We don't know the reason behind it. We don't know if maybe she was working on something. Maybe there was a studio that was available to her. tour. Maybe, you know, she's got a friend she was staying with. Obviously, we know Wilmette is a pretty well-to-do place. Yeah. Some larger homes that can probably hold many people, celebrities, you know, what have you. So we don't know the story behind that. Maybe a little bit more of that will come out. One thing we do know, and I'm not trying to make light of this subject at all, because, it, you know, like I said, we couldn't really gauge how serious this story was from the beginning. They've got a ton of bike trails, and at 6 a.m. on Sunday, I guess she went out on a bike and was not dressed appropriately for riding bike, not what you'd normally see in Wilmette on a Sunday morning, you know, the people with the biker shorts and the helmets and stuff like that. It sounds like she just grabbed what she had and went, and was wearing leather pants and a parka and a backpack. So, you know, not exactly something that you do if you're just going out for a Sunday morning bike ride.
All right. There was also something that I saw. She's been having some family problems. She posted a message on Facebook hours before she was last seen on Sunday that appeared to be directed to her oldest son, Jake Reynolds. Yeah. And that was kind of cryptic.
It looks like there's some kind of legal battle going on right now, some kind of custody battle going on. If you look back at some of her Facebook posts, it you know, she kind of goes on a rant about representation, and it's really hard to kind of pin it down. Remember, we never know on Facebook, too, especially with celebrities, who's posting something. Mm-hmm. You know, we never know what the motivation is unless we hear something from, you know, the publicist or the agent or whomever, what this is all about. So we're kind of starting to put this together now. It looked like there was some kind of legal proceeding tomorrow that she was referencing in that post. So
with one of her kids who's in Ireland's version of DCFS, from my understanding, it's Tusla, T-U-S-L-A, and she was telling her older son to take custody of your brother. My lawyer will be making blah blah blah. That's on her Facebook page. It is a verified account, but you never know.
Yeah, you just, I mean, who knows?
Ryan, as the lawsuit, Arsenio Hall's lawsuit against her came to light a little over a week ago, several different websites were talking about her history of breakdowns and depression, that sort of thing. Has she been hospitalized for this in the past?
Do you remember back in 2007, she was on Oprah and admitted to suffering from bipolar disorder. Oh. I know it's something you guys have talked about on this show. You guys have had a lot of people talking about it, but you know, it's something that she's struggled with. And we saw a lot of the music community come out when it was reported that she was missing it, and to show support, you know, for some of the struggles and things that she's had to go through. Like I said, it's very, very strange because she's someone who probably hasn't been in the front of our mind for years, maybe decades, right? And all of a sudden it's like, whoa, she's in the northern suburbs. Whoa, she's missing. Whoa, she, you know, has been suffering from bipolar disorder. And last fall, she apparently, according to family members, had threatened suicide. They had found a note. So, you know, when police are taking this up in Wilmette, they're kind of going down that path and thinking, well, wait a minute here. This may not have been someone who's just looking to get off the radar. Maybe it's, you know, something more serious, whether it be physical or mental.
And WGN-TV reporting singer-songwriter Sinead O'Connor found safe after being reported missing in Chicago's northern suburbs earlier Monday. Sources tell WGN she was located at a nearby hotel and has been taken to a local hospital. She did have, she had gotten medical treatment back in November after leaving an angry suicidal note for some of her family members. So it's mental illness is tricky, and we wish her success in recovering from this. I'm glad they found her.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, it's one of those things that it could turn out to be someone just seeking attention, and we just didn't know at that point. You know, we didn't know what the mental situation, the physical situation is, you know, and I mean, let's face it, Wilmette's bike paths go along the lakefront. I mean, you know, one run, we've seen a number of people who have been staring at their cell phones and, you know, walked off, and, you know, and it's been a really scary situation for them. So I'm sure that the Wilmette police did everything they could to kind of track her down, and hopefully this did work out.
Any information as to who reported the missing persons?
No, that's a great question. All we know is a caller has expressed concern for her well-being. No other information. That was the release that we were given this morning from Wilmette Police.
I know this is secondary to everything that's gone on today with her, but I wonder if you're Arsenio Hall, if you show a little sympathy and realize you're dealing with somebody under very tough times, Maybe you drop the lawsuit. That's the last thing she needs piled on her right now.
I don't think he's got a lot of sympathy for her after what she said to him. I don't know. I could be wrong, but we'll see.
Someone suffering from mental illness, it just seems bizarre that Arsenio Hall was brought up.
The defamation is out there, according to him. I mean, the shot was fired, you know, regardless of what the reasoning or rationale was behind it. I mean,
she said
what she said, and she's got, you know, thousands of followers on Facebook. So,
yeah. All right. Ryan, we appreciate it.
No problem. Thanks so much.
That's Ryan Burrow from the WGN Newsroom.
Look, we solved a missing person.
We did.
How about that?
Well done, Ryan. We'll take a break and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
You proud of yourself, Bill?
In some ways, I am.
You should be.
In some ways, I have to be honest, I am. Yeah.
That was pretty good. I'm looking on TMZ.com because they honestly is where they broke the news
again. Yep.
What is it with that Harvey guy? What's his name?
What is Harvey's last name? I can't think of it right now.
I don't know why. I don't watch that show on a regular basis, but when I do watch it, I like it.
Yeah. It's enjoyable, isn't it?
Is it Harvey Levin?
It is Harvey Levin. Yeah. Thank you.
I know it's kind of...
Go on.
Fakey.
Well...
Yet not fake. I mean, that's what I imagine a newsroom and a news... You know, it's in L.A. What do you expect?
Right. Well, they get the show where everybody's just kind of gathered around, and then they show you some story, and it's the Olsen twins, and they make fun of them, and the guy with the long blonde hair says something, and I don't know. I don't think that really goes out in a newsroom quite that way, but it's usually the softer news that they're covering.
I'm okay with that. Hard news, sometimes you need an escape.
Sure. Harvey Levin provides that.
And the soft news kind of turned into hard news today when Sinead O'Connor went missing. And I know everybody hates when people say went missing, but that's
right.
What you say.
You don't go missing. You're either missing or
had,
not.
They also had Prince, you know, making an emergency landing in Moline. So
You're right. We were on the air with Dean Richards. And he said, according to reports on TMZ, I'm telling you, they got their spies out there everywhere.
Right.
More than Sinead.
I guess so.
Who's spooling pasta with Harvey Levin?
Right. I need more stories about Ann Jillian. Come on, Ann Sneed. Get on the Ann Jillian warpath, please. There was a time, like, Ann Jillian was out of everybody's news, and she was still making news here in the city. I don't know. I don't get it. But a weird couple of days, would you admit, for Sinead O'Connor? I'm hoping she's okay.
They say, according to reports everywhere, Sinead O'Connor found safe, taken to local hospital, sources tell WGN-TV, although I went to TMZ and they do not have that updated yet.
Oh, that's strange. I wonder why not.
I don't know.
They've been at the forefront of this story. I don't get that.
Oh, there's a tip line. Do you have any tips? Why don't you call them? Call Harvey Levin right now.
I don't have any tips.
Bill Left, WGN Radio. We are reporting that Sinead O'Connor has reportedly been found.
Right. Tell the guy with all the blonde hair that we're working on it. I'll tell him that.
Come on. Maybe they'll give you a T-shirt.
All right. I didn't know there was a T-shirt involved. All right. Maybe I will make that call. Absolutely. When we come back, we're going to tell you... Did you see the clip of the girl swimming in Boca Raton, Florida, and she gets out of the water? She's swimming in Boca Raton, and then she gets out of the water, and a shark has bitten onto her arm and will not let go. It's clenched onto her arm and refuses to let go. Did you see this video?
I did,
at all?
And it's scary as heck.
Well, we know so little about sharks, but this is the time of year that all of a sudden everybody's reporting on shark attacks and that sort of thing. I don't know what it is about May and June, but that's when you start to get all the shark attacks.
That's when all the bunnies breed here, so I guess the sharks
in Florida?
I don't know how big nurse sharks get, and we're going to find out a little bit more about sharks.
This was a nurse shark that bit her, right?
Yes.
Okay.
But I have to be honest with you, if I'm going to be bitten by a shark, I'm okay with it being that shark because it wasn't that big. It's no great white.
Because that would just... That would tear you to shreds. If you're able to pick a shark to bite you,
this
you would
one's
think
not
the nurse
so bad.
Shark would be your option.
This, I got to be honest with you also, I wouldn't be surprised if it turns out it was a prank, and because it looks like a rubber shark
I know. It clenched on, and it just, like, its jaws locked onto this girl, and then even after it was dead, it wasn't letting up. It just stayed on her arm. They had to take it. They took the girl to the hospital with the shark on her arm. It was hanging on her arm.
I had a hamster bite my finger once, which isn't quite as bad. I get it.
Wait,
but
this is the weirdest thing. Did the hamster, after it bit you, did it not let go?
Yes.
Because we...
And I hate to even say this. His name was Ratso, and he lived after this. But you have a hamster on your finger,
right?
Like biting through the bottom of your nail on one side and the finger on your other. You're trying to like open his jaws.
Right.
You get to a point where it's like, I don't know how to do this other than pry his jaw open. I was scared I was going to kill him. I didn't, but he ultimately let go. But at that point, I don't know.
I swear to you, here's why I'm amazed by this. When I was a kid, friends of my parents brought their kids over, and we had gerbils, and one of the gerbils bit this kid David on the finger, and the same exact thing
just clamped down,
would not let go, and they had to take him to the emergency room with the gerbil on his finger, and our story did not end quite as well as yours did.
The gerbil died.
We have in our study, we have a small gerbil head on a plaque.
You
that
do
we,
not stop.
But I don't.
It.
I didn't know that happened even once, much less twice. That's crazy that you had the same, almost the same exact
thing.
Yeah,
I don't know if I think he was sleeping and I woke him up and he was startled.
Panicked.
Yeah.
Oh man.
But he ultimately let go. But I have a scar on my finger from him.
Still
from
now.
Ratso. But I mean, I really.
Is he still alive?
No, God, this was 40 years ago.
I think, don't hamsters live like 50 years?
No, turtles do.
Turtles do, right.
But I was coming to the point where I don't want to hurt this animal, but I want to get it off my finger.
Right, you can't live your life with a hamster
and
on
going
your
to the emergency room, again, this sounds so terrible coming from me, the animal lover, but do you go to the emergency room or do you...
Well, you can't just make an appointment for Thursday. I'll come in.
I know.
I come in Thursday around 4
but
o'clock.
But you just kind of...
Right, you feel like you're using up a space.
Yeah,
right?
Do you kill it at that point? Although, look
that
at the shark.
That would have made you sad. Right.
It didn't let go after death. How come your muscles wouldn't
relax?
I don't know.
Yeah, you would think.
We're going to find out all about this.
Right. Somebody from the Shedd Aquarium will explain everything we need to know about shark attacks. That's coming up in just a little bit.
And then are we going to get a gerbil and hamster expert?
Yeah.
Where do we go for that?
We'll
Habitrail USA?
We'll find one. Yeah. All right, stick around. It's Bill and Wendy on WG.
Oh, the shark, babe, has such teeth, dear.
And it claps him really tightly.
We just told you the story, and maybe you saw this on the news or on the internet over the last couple of days. This is crazy. There's a girl who goes swimming in Boca Raton, Florida, and she feels some discomfort on her arm, and she looks down, and there's a 2-foot shark that has bitten into her arm and will not let go. She comes out of the water. The shark's not giving up. It gets crazier from there. Joining us right now from the Shedd Aquarium, Heather Urbaniak. Heather, what's going on?
I don't know. I heard about this today. I couldn't really believe it. It was a little tiny shark, actually. It was only about 2 feet long. It
yeah.
looked like a nurse shark.
Yep.
It looked like a fake rubber shark kind of at first, didn't it?
Pardon me?
It looked like a fake rubber shark at first.
It was a shark. It looked like a nurse shark pup, which is a pup is what you call a baby shark. Those guys are really common in Florida waters, and people have encounters with them all the time. And actually, people go diving and swim with them all the time. They're really docile sharks. The only time I've heard of problems with nurse sharks is a lot of times because they are so docile, people go up to them, and sometimes they think they can play with them or, you know, pull their tails. And then when the shark turns around and gets annoyed, then they're surprised. So that's the most common thing I've heard about with nurse sharks is sometimes, a diver or somebody, because they are laying there, goes up and tries to interact with them and they grab their tail or something, they'll turn around and get annoyed with them.
Heather, I'm taking notes. So you say do not try to grab a shark's tail. Am I getting that right?
No. And that's the thing, you know, we talk about mistaken identity with shark attacks, and that's super common, too. But another thing is don't harass the shark either, because it's a wild animal, and I think we have to remember that. Even though we're at the beach, there's lots of very big predators down there in the Florida waters. So it's something that we have to think about when we go swimming at the beach.
Sure.
All right, who is going to taunt a shark? Let me just say that.
I don't think that, you know, anybody purposefully thinks that they're going to turn around and get bitten. I think sometimes people just, you know, will think harmlessly, I'm going to play with it. And sharks are very quick a lot of times if they turn around. They, you know, they can be, sharks, believe it or not, can become frightened of people as well, and the way that sharks defend themselves is with their teeth.
And if this is a baby, it's obviously a giant person there to this little baby shark.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know all the details. They don't really say, like, what exactly happened leading up to her getting bit, if it just swam up to her and did it, or if, you know, she had seen it in the water and that it you know, had, if she played with it and then it bit her. Or so I don't really know the circumstances leading up to what happened today.
Now, can you explain this part, Heather, because Wendy and I are baffled by this. Once the shark bites into this woman's arm, it will not let go. Like, its teeth just clench, and even after the shark had been out of the water, and actually after the shark had died, they couldn't get the teeth to unclench. Why would that be?
Well, there are certain species of sharks, and I know some of the smaller kinds of sharks that have jaws that are made for crushing and grinding. They can, when they latch onto something, their jaw locks. So, and it'll unlock, but it sometimes takes a few minutes or a little while for it to unlock. And in the process, she got out of the water. The animal wasn't in the water for a while, and I'm sure that's eventually why the animal succumbed to just being out of the water and died, and it died with its jaw locked on her. But I do know that there are, I've heard of it before with sharks with jaws, like nurse sharks, that they can lock onto something, and it takes a while for them to come off, but it can let go.
Wow.
And, I mean, a lot of times, too, you know, when sharks, that kind of shark mates with each other, the males are, like, made for locking their jaws on the females, and they don't let go because when sharks mate with each other, they bite. So,
Wendy doesn't sound like
Wendy
fun.
Does, too, by the way, Heather.
Shut up, Bill.
Between you and me, Wendy does, too.
I get uncomfortable watching animals do it. I worked at Brookfield Zoo forever, and I just, that really, you know, giving tours and all of a sudden the lions are at it.
Yeah.
It's very embarrassing.
Yeah.
But so really, they bite each other during the act? How come they're procreating? If I was a female shark,
right,
I would say no.
Female sharks oftentimes are usually bigger and more aggressive than males. Their skin can be up to like an inch thicker than male sharks because they've been, over millions of years of evolution, they've been designed to be a little bit bigger and their skin thicker than the males, or else the males, if they were bigger, would probably hurt the females pretty bad, but that's what they're made for. So,
but is biting always a part? Like, is biting always a part of the mating?
What, are you getting tips for this weekend?
No,
what?
But I'm saying if you're a shark and you put an ad on Craigslist, I'd put no biting. I don't want any biting.
That's part of pretty routine mating rituals with all species of sharks.
Wow.
Shedaquarium.org is the website to go to. Heather Urbaniak on the line with us. You're a senior aquarist.
Yeah.
I have not heard that term being used. Is that a relatively new term?
No, actually it's not. It's what all of us at the aquarium are called. The entire time I've worked here, it's been 15 years, so it's not that new. But that's the job title of all of us here that take care of the fish and the critters here at the aquarium.
I love when the guy goes down into that big tank and feeds them. Really, a day at the Shedd Aquarium is really an awesome experience.
Yeah, it's a really fun place to be and fun place to work. The building itself, the location, it's wonderful.
What have you seen in your years there at the Shedd Aquarium? What have you seen, Heather, that even you, an aquarist, is amazed by?
I mean, I think every day when I come into work, the animals are just incredible. I feel so lucky to be here, and you know, just taking care of the animals that I get to take care of every day is incredible.
Sure.
Have you ever been bitten by an animal there?
Yes, I have.
Can you talk about it?
Every time I've been bitten, it's been my own fault. It's
oh wow.
Typically, I've either been feeding and not using, like, I've used my hands, or
instead of the iron mesh glove,
I didn't have that on, or I was handling a shark and it was frightened, so
yeah.
Both of which was, you know, understandable.
Have you in turn bitten any of the animals that you have taken care of there?
I try not to. I don't think they'd like that.
All right.
Hey, you know, while we have you on the air, senior aquarist Heather Urbaniak, there have been numerous ads I've heard for an at-home jellyfish tank, and it looks really cool. And is that something that you can have at home and have them flourish in a saltwater tank?
I honestly, I haven't heard of that. Probably not. I mean, jellyfish are pretty tricky to take care of at home. There's a lot of water quality requirements and
special food. What do jellyfish eat?
We actually feed them live baby brine shrimp. They'll eat
sea monkeys.
They eat other kinds of jellyfish sometimes. They eat small fish. It just depends on the kind of jellyfish.
But you want them there at the aquarium? They're part of the eco-cycle that exists in an aquarium. You need them for some reason?
The jellyfish?
Yeah.
What do you mean?
And we have some here.
They're just cool to look at.
Yeah, I mean, they're really beautiful to look at because they just kind of float with wherever the water's pushing them.
I just wonder, like, you have to be very careful, obviously, in getting the right mix of animals there in the tank because you don't want any to wipe out the rest of the population, right?
Well, I mean, typically with jellyfish, they're in by themselves. We don't house them with other kinds of jellyfish, or even we don't put them in with other fish either. They're typically in by themselves.
Oh.
Have you ever been to the aquarium? Maybe you should go someday.
It's been a while.
It has
I love
been a while.
It there.
And watching the jellyfish to me is like nature's lava lamp, kind of.
Yeah, it is. They're really, really cool.
I don't know if it's just me, Heather, but it seems like every time there's a new Sharknado movie, you get more stories about shark attacks. Is that possible?
I don't think that's possible. I mean, I think, you know, we hear a lot about, like this past year, 2015, there were a lot of shark attacks on the East Coast this past year. And, you know, there's also more people getting in the water than ever. There's more people on planet Earth.
Yeah.
Than there ever has been before. So I think that's why we're having more shark encounters than we've ever had before. So I think that, you know, I always tell everybody, if you're going to the beach, I think we need to start looking at the beach a little bit differently. I mean, the ocean has some of the largest predators in the world living in it. You wouldn't prepare by going on an African safari by just grabbing your sunblock and a towel and going and not learning about the animals that live there. And you certainly wouldn't get out of your safari bus when you were there. So that's, I kind of equate that to walking into the ocean educating yourself on what's in the water. So I always tell everybody, you know, pay attention to your surroundings. Look, are there fishing piers near the beach? Are there people fishing? Is it near dusk or dawn? There's a lot of things that, you know, do you see fish swimming around in the water? And, you know, the simple answer is if you see that stuff, then just don't go in and use your, you know, be smart because, you know, you don't want to put yourself or a shark in that situation.
Right.
So, yeah, I think, you know, we need to start looking at going to the beach a little bit differently because there's getting to be a lot more humans on this earth than there are sharks now. So
yeah, that's true. I have a silly question. We go to a little beach club in southern Illinois, and I noticed a couple of years ago we'd go in the water, and there's a lot of sunfish and just, you know, not really scary fish that are swimming around near the rafts. And there was one year that they were biting at the moles on our neck.
And, really?
Yeah. Did they just think, you know, on your pale skin because you didn't have a suntan yet, did they just think it was little bits of food?
I don't know. It's possible, maybe. But
isn't that weird?
They could see it look darker. They could see that.
Maybe.
I didn't like swimming that year. They didn't bite at our moles last year, but two years ago, it seemed... I wouldn't go in the water because, quite honestly, I don't want little kisses from sunfish. All right. Well, you are the shark expert and a senior aquarist at the Shedd Aquarium. We appreciate you talking to us, Heather Urbaniak, and basically... not unlike a pit bull, a shark has a locking jaw mechanism that even after it passed away, it took some time for it to release. Is that the consensus here?
Yeah, they can have their jaw can lock, and sometimes it takes a bit for them to unlock their jaw, but it does. Had they probably left the animal in the water for a while, it might have unlocked its jaw.
Although, are you going to leave the water or the animal in the water when it's attached to your arm? Yeah. I don't know.
I mean, I think people panic and they don't know what to do. You know, me, I would know what to do and I wouldn't freak out about it. But, you know, most...
You're an aquarist, though.
Exactly.
That's the difference.
That doesn't scare me much. But, you know, I understand why they did what they did. And
maybe in the future, Heather, they should have like a release button somewhere on the shark's back that we can touch and can hit it and then they'll just release. All right. We'll work on that.
That's a good idea.
Thank you so much, Heather. We appreciate it.
No problem.
Thanks, Heather.
Have a great day. All right. All of our questions answered.
And nobody from any of the museums in Chicago is ever going to talk to us again.
I don't think so. I think that's probably going to be the last time. All right, we'll take a quick break, and then we have more show for you. It's Bill F. Wendy Snyder on WGN.
All right, Sinead O'Connor was missing earlier today. She had gone for a bike ride yesterday at 6 a.m. Police received a call from someone expressing concern after she didn't return. It's unclear at this point why she was in Wilmette. And according to the Wilmette Police Department, they have issued the word that singer Sinead O'Connor has been found safe. No additional details, including where she was found, are being released at this time. The official police department statement reads, and I quote, "She is safe and no longer listed as a missing endangered person."
That's good news.
That is really good.
I hope she's okay.
And then ChicagoCBSLocal.com has a picture of CBS cameraman Lou Kleinberg spotted the singer in the north suburb last week, posted a picture on Facebook, which has been retweeted across social media, and she looks very much the same. A little older.
Yeah. I wouldn't, but if, I mean, I live 3 minutes from Wilmette, and if I was in Wilmette and she walked past me, it wouldn't register. I wouldn't think, oh, that's Sinead O'Connor walking past me in Wilmette.
I would say, boy, that looks like Sinead O'Connor. Cause
you
she
wouldn't
still
think it was
has
her, though, would
well,
you?
Well, she's got that haircut going right. on, the buzz cut that right. she's had for years.
Yeah.
That would probably catch my eye, and then I would say, that looks like Sinead O'Connor, but why would she be in Wilmette?
Right. That's the part that would yeah. be mysterious, right? I don't know.
Well, that's good news. She has been found and has been taken to a nearby hospital, according to reports, and hope she checks out okay. Mental illness is something that really can mess with you in
oh,
many
yeah.
ways. So
without a doubt.
Glad she was found safe.
I don't know. I don't even know if we have time to do this. I just want to mention this to you very quickly. I don't know why I need to mention it to you, but to anybody listening who's interested, there's going to be another version of American Idol. But this, Wendy, will be an X-rated version of American Idol.
I'm in.
Do you want to know this? It says, some people will do anything for $1 million, even compete to be America's next top porn star. That is the premise behind a new show, The Sex Factor.
Oh, my God.
A very NSFW, you know what that is? Mm-mm. Not safe for work. A very not safe for work version of shows like American Idol or The Voice, but with a big difference. The contestants will moan and grunt instead of singing Rihanna covers.
Does it really say moan and grunt?
Moan and grunt. Right there. Those are two of the judges, by the way. The eight-woman, eight-man competition debuts on May the 19th on xhamster.com.
What?
That's a porn site, I guess. Kevin told me anyway. At the end of 10 episodes, one man and one woman will each win $1 million and the right to officially declare themselves a porn star.
And this can't just anybody go become a porn star?
The Sex Factor. I don't think it's that easy. I think there's more to it.
You'd always have your hat on.
Right, that's how you know it was me. That's my trademark. Who's the guy with the hat? Who looks slightly out of place. Just slightly. The contestants. Oh, listen to this. All-star, they got a great, you know.
A
if you're
going
to put
what?
A show together, you got to get some big judges. Listen to who they have. Remy LaCroix, Lexi Bell, Tori Black, Asa Akira, and Kieran Lee.
Who are any of those people porn stars, I would imagine?
Those are all, Wendy, we say adult stars. They're adult performers. Kieran Lee, it says here, has had a certain portion of his anatomy insured for $1 million.
Who hasn't?
You're in good hands, by the way.
There are two double entendres
I don't even know what that means. It just seemed time to say that, but I have no idea why. So, yeah. So I don't know where the auditions are, and it's probably best I don't.
Yeah. Sir, are you here to audition? No, just to watch.
Right. Just a fan. Just in town. I'm a fan. All right. We'll take a quick break, and then Rowan Ann will be by. It's Bill and Wendy WGN.